Hi, everybody. This is Ken Wilson. Once upon a time, I broadcast blues hockey. I always listen to Let's Go Blues Radio. It's everything you'll want as a blues fan. Oh, baby.
Stop doing those diet or workout fads to lose weight. Use the tried and true approach from Rockin' That Idea Life that helps you find balance while enjoying food in moderation and nourishing your body. Try the Lean 30 program at rockinthatidealife.com and let today be your last first day of your weight loss journey.
When buying or selling your home, you need to feel protected. Realtor Mike Burgoyne not only looks out for your interests, but as a St. Louis area police officer, will make sure you feel safe and well-informed with every decision. Email Mike at strikewithmike.com and start the process today. That's Mike at strikewithmike.com.
Get ready to hear some noise tonight. You're just seconds away from Let's Go Blues Radio.
No doubt about it, eh? You're listening to Kurt, Bill, and Jeff on Let's Go Blues Radio, the original St. Louis Blues hockey fan podcast. Take it away, boys.
Welcome to episode 25 of season 13. This is episode number 456 all time of the often imitated, never duplicated. We have come to chew bubblegum and kick ass, and we're all out of bubblegum. We're the original St. Louis Blues Hockey Podcast, Let's Go Blues Radio. Special thanks to our sponsors, Dustin from RockinThatIDLife.com and Realtor Mike, Mike Burgoyne, who you can email at Mike@StrikeWithMike.com for proudly sponsoring the show. Please check them out. Also, don't forget to check out our t-shirt shop at Let'sGoBlues.com for some well-designed and fairly priced blues-themed t-shirts. We don't mention this at the start of the show, but we should. Kurt recently revamp our Discord server, so make sure you check us out over at letsgoblues.com/discord, correct?
I did want to mention that. Yeah, that's, yeah, you can access the link that way and find out information about it, letsgoblues.com/discord. Would love to start, and there's actually some feedback I got on the letsgoblues.com forums about the Discord server, and it apparently some of it wasn't accessible. We had the permissions wrong before, so I kind of just changed things around. They have forum channels too that are available now, so it's more like a discussion forum setup in certain parts of it. And we also have the traditional Discord text chat channel as well for like game day stuff or whatever. So cool. If you like the forum format, they got the forum options too on there. So it's so for folks that use the letsgoblues.com forums, it'd be an easier transition. We do want to transition away from the letsgoblues.com forums over to Discord in time. So that'll be a thing happening eventually.
Do we have a drop dead date on that?
No. But it'll probably be in the off season sometime.
Okay, cool. Yep. So again, that is letsgoblues.com/discord. Check that out. It is Wednesday, March 27th, and we are streaming live on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, maybe Instagram. It's giving me trouble. I have no idea if we're on there or not. We are also on at the Corner TV at Patty's Pub, wherever you get live video casts. To interact with the show on social media, our handle on all social channels is at LGB Radio. Just search for us and you'll find us. And if you haven't already done so, please like, follow, subscribe, ring the bell, buy a t-shirt from our shop, listen to Kirk Price's other podcasts, Beanie Baby Fever, or do whatever you can do to help us out. I'm your host, Jeff Ponder, and I'm joined by Kirk Price and Bill Day. Of course, producer Austin is facing allegations. The agenda for tonight includes the Blues' quest for the playoffs, an injury to a fan favorite, the Blues signing a young star, all that and more on this extra sassy edition of Let's Go Blues Radio. Right here at the top, I do want to mention that I am fighting something off. I think it's a cold. I don't know if it's allergies. So if you hear me sneezing or coughing, I will do my best to cover that. But I do apologize if that does happen at all during tonight's show. Gentlemen, how are we doing tonight?
Great. 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 Well, the Blues fan in me is frustrated and suffering. But personally,
I think the best way to describe the Blues fan in me is kind of puzzled. You know, like I'm like torn in sense of like I'm proud of where this team's at because I and proud of myself, to be quite honest, because this is where I thought they'd be.
Yeah.
That's but I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But at the same time, it's like I want them to make the playoffs and I want me to be wrong.
Right.
So it's kind of a weird spot I'm in.
It's as if all of our preseason prognostications were setting ourselves up to be super happy when they made the playoffs, right? Yeah. Like, well, you know, lowered expectations and all that. And yeah.
But, hey, you know, you predict them to be, you know, on the bubble, you know, whether they just miss it or just make it, you know, that's a shot in the dark as far as how it's going to land. But we kind of, you know, Armstrong said the same thing as far as where this team would be. That's kind of where they are. So I think I picked them to sneak in as a wild card. They might, but it's going to be really tough at this point. Yeah, I mean, they got to go something like probably 8-1-1 and if Vegas goes 500, something like that, you know. So they can do it. Their schedule is super easy, which we can talk about later, but that they have the opportunity to at least try to do it, but that we'll talk about again.
The lost
opportunity against Vegas to get 2 points regulation, that hurt.
We say that we need them to go 8-1-1. Honestly, they could just go, I mean, I hate to say it like this because, you know, I don't want people to get their hopes up, but, you know, they could go 3, well, I don't want to say 3, let's say 5-4-1, and Vegas can just lose out, you know.
Well,
but,
I think I
like that to happen.
I think I'm like realistically speaking, right?
Vegas'
schedule is a lot tougher. And I can pull it up, but they're like in the middle pack.
And they've got so many injuries.
They do, but they're getting goaltending all of a sudden now. So that sucks, but they had it against us and they had it for most of the game against Nashville until the third period. But so I mean, they do have injuries and their schedule is a lot tougher than ours, but it's not really tough in terms of the entire NHL. They're like 17th and they're in the middle, something like that. We have the second easiest schedule from here on out. So, you know, I realistically, you got to think that Vegas is going to probably go 500, maybe at least. So if you want to make Vegas win games, the Blues have to go on a nice tear. I would love for the Blues to go maybe 500 and Vegas to lose out. That'd be fantastic, but I don't. That's probably not going to happen.
Right, and I'm with you. I think the realistic thing is the Blues have to play their best hockey of the season. Vegas has to just play 500. Blues can still get in.
And which the Blues have been playing very well. They've been on a nice run. Now, granted, they had a hole to dig out of, and they've been 1-6-7 going into the Vegas game. So, I mean, yeah, it's
right. And that was the first point we dropped them for. I mean, that's you know, the one game you can't drop a point to. You do it. So,
and that was such a. And we can talk about it when we get to it, but that was a good game. I mean,
that was
a really good game. It just could not. I mean, they got really good goaltending. I mean,
both teams,
they did.
That was one of those games where it was like Binnington played great, but Thompson played that just little bit better. And it's unfortunate.
I think the gap was a little bit wider, but they were both good.
Well, and he had massive save on the breakaway on Hayes. Yeah,
we'll get to that later.
We had a whole segment on that.
Yes, we do. We do. I'll add, let's see. I actually have two things I want to talk about. First of all, I did mention before the show started, Bill, I did get a new kitten. He's running around here somewhere. I was going to hold him up. 3 months old, beautiful black cat. Wonderful, sweet little boy. We decided to name him Nandor De Laurentiis. That's his full name.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I don't know the reference. Explain the reference.
It's a deep cut from What We Do in the Shadows, the TV show, not the movie. Nandor is one of the main characters, but his real name is Nandor the Relentless. He's like an old warrior, Viking type guy. who becomes a vampire living in Staten Island. And he goes on the news in the latest season, and the news anchor asks him, you know, what's your name? And he's like, Nandor. And he's got this thick accent. He's like, Nandor the Relentless. And then they put on the screen, Nandor De Laurentiis.
That's
and it's just, I cracked up at that. I had to like pause it the first time I watched it. I was laughing so hard.
So you're like all in. Cat. You're all in on this. Right. What We Do in the Shadows.
A casual What We Do in the Shadows fan would have just named the cat Jackie Daytona. Right.
That's, we considered that too.
Right.
That was.
But that's too easy. That is too easy.
Yep.
That is great. Black cat. Yep. Yeah, named after Nandor. I love it.
Yep, I figured you would. Other thing I want to say, I'm going to call you two out right now. I listened back last week a little bit, not the whole thing.
What'd we get wrong?
And you didn't get anything wrong.
Of course not.
I listened back after listener Leon, who I know is listening to the show. He's one of those guys who he says when he's into a podcast, he does not miss a second. Okay. And so I know he's going to hear this. Listener Leon told me Saturday, Bill and Kurt were fucking crazy. You were not acting out of sorts last week when I came on and I had a couple gummies in New York City.
You were acting out of sorts.
He said I was acting fine and you guys were overplaying.
Not initially.
And I agree.
Initially you were fine.
Right.
As the show went on,
right,
you got loopy.
That was, and I imagine because I was exhausted too,
which goes into the decision, right? You know, at least if it were me, I would have thought twice about how many milligrams I was taking. But
yes, 60.
Yeah, I took 60.
60 milligrams.
You were loopy, and I'm sure Lister Leon has been around you to know how you are when you're.
That's a influence. Good point.
What's
actually
the recommended dosage? 5 to 10?
Oh, that's what it is. That's nothing. No, that's, come on.
I'm telling
not
you.
Not an experienced man like myself.
Yeah, you looked like you were handling it really well last week when it came
to this. Hey, I was, and I was a couple beers deep too. So plus I had what's the beer from Butterbeer? Butterbeer?
Yeah.
I'm going to say Buzzbeer, which is Drew Carey.
You couldn't get enough water last week.
Oh, well, the problem is in the hotel rooms they give you that size cup of water. It's tiny.
Right. Yeah, but that's also because you were so thirsty. Okay, all right. I mean,
there we go.
It was funny. It was funny.
Listener Leon listening live tonight. He says, "To be fair, I was listening on the podcast. I couldn't see his eyes on the YouTube.
Check out his eyes. Yeah.
When I do anything like that, I do go like this a lot. And I think even Beaver, what's his name? Kyle Beaver on the show is what he calls himself. I think he called me out saying, Ponder, open your eyes. So I do understand that.
There was a question by Trees in the chat. Is there a link in the chat for the Discord stuff? I just posted it. It's letsgoblues.com/Discord. And we are, like I said, in the tweet I sent out, they're looking for suggestions. If you think, you know, there needs to be more channels, less channels, different kinds of channels, whatever, you know, let us know. And it's a work in progress. You know,
we'll shirtless pics of Bill. We could add those into
a channel. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah.
Is there a scramble porn channel?
Damn well better.
How funny would that be just to have a YouTube channel? I'm sure there is, right? Where it's just scrambled porn the whole time, just on a loop. 24 hours of scrambled porn. You know how many kids would be watching? Well,
right.
The internet's a thing now, right. So you don't
guys,
know.
Guys of a certain age.
I was going to say.
Living out their childhood again, yeah.
Yes. We'll be sitting there watching and just laughing like fools because it's watching, like, oh my God, this is my childhood.
Yeah, you're waiting on 10 minutes. Saw a boob. That was a boob.
Yep.
That's all I need.
Yep. Good times. Well, official beers of episode number 456. You can follow each of us on the Untappd app. Kurt is at CPrice12. You can find me at JPonner94. Bill is at BillyBlueNote33. I forget. Is it Bill first now?
Yes.
Okay.
It is Bill first now. And first, I have to shout out Trees with the Bull Durham reference in the chat.
Candace likes to make a nice gift.
It's Bull Durham's time. Right, it's Bull Durham time of year.
So yeah, I couldn't place it, and then you said that. Like, that's it. That's the meeting on the mound. Yes. Yeah. That was hilarious.
Yes, love that movie so much. I will debate that is the greatest baseball movie of the 80s. It's so close between that and
Major League.
Major League.
Oh, Major League.
That's the best, in my opinion.
I like Major League. Major League.
That's my favorite. Both,
they're so neck and neck, but just different kinds of comedy.
Yeah. So agree. Major League is just more my kind of comedy. I mean, I can quote that movie all day long.
I can quote most of Bull Durham, and you know it's so many. And Bull Durham actually has like a pretty damn amazing soundtrack. If you ever go watch the music credits or pay attention to the music in it, it's fucking incredible, right? Los Lobos is in there, Smithereens, Soul Asylum, like before they were really anybody, way back in the 80s. Very good soundtrack, awesome movie. But we're here to talk about beer now.
We are.
So tonight, where is it? Where there it is? Oh, so
KBS.
KBS.
Oh, nice. Can I read it? Spicy.
It's
chocolate?
The Mexican spicy chocolate. Oh, KBS.
I love Mexican chocolate beers. Good.
It's good. It's no Abraxas. You know, I do really is I. I'm not a perennial snob. Perennial makes great beers, but I'm not like, oh, if it's not perennial, it's not the best. Abraxas is the bar setter for chocolates.
Where is perennial brewed?
St. Louis.
St. Louis.
That's what I thought. There. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I've I thought there. Because yeah. I was, I've not been there. I knew it was Missouri. I wasn't sure if it was exactly St. Louis. Is that the one in Clayton?
No, it's off 55. It's right by River de Pere.
Okay.
It is.
Yeah.
So that's not far from me at all. I asked because I was at a bar in New York that had perennial. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's odd. And it was perennial. It wasn't a different brewery called perennial. I was very, very surprised.
I haven't been there in years. I was not overly impressed with the inside of the brewery, the tasting room, because it was kind of bland.
Yeah.
And it's like just open and not really there, but they may have changed it since then. I don't know.
Yeah. But. It's probably been longer since I've been there, but it kind of had a, late 50s cafeteria style feel
yes.
in the inside.
Oh, yeah, tile floor, drywall walls.
Yeah.
Not much to look at, and there was a big bar, and then they had the beer, and it was just that was it. I mean,
but the beer was good.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They had a chocolate mint stout that was really good. It was called 13, I think. Something like that back then. Delicious. It was really good.
Is it Kurt or me?
I think it's me.
I think it's you.
Is it me?
Go ahead,
it's Kurt.
Yep.
I got another candy bar stout. My beer fridge down here. I found a couple more, so I've got the Four Hands Snickers chocolate milk stout.
Nice. So if I get to a second beer, I've got the Almond Joy.
So. Ooh, I got an Almond Joy in there, and I found one of these, which is like, oh yay! I got another one of these. So it's, and I do have a little ramekin here of some peanuts and chocolate chips to go with it. So
ooh, don't eat it on the air; you'll get yelled at.
It'll be in our iTunes reviews. Before you go on the show, God.
Yeah. Yep. So mine is Goose Island 312 Wheat Ale.
Yep.
Having this tonight. I don't know if I've had this on the show before, but I do enjoy this one.
Moving into the warm weather beers.
That's right. And I will add, I'm drinking it out of my Slimer glass that I got from Alamo Draft House for the new Ghostbusters movie.
I may just have to go on my own. Julie's like totally against going to the theater anymore, but I need to see this Ghostbusters in the theater. So
it's worth seeing it in the theater. I'll say that. I would think if you're going to see it, it'd be best seeing it in the theater.
But Jeff, I don't think Dan Buffa liked it.
I didn't either. I didn't either. Honestly, I was surprised, and I've seen a lot of people say they love it. Which, hey, good for them. But I do think of the four, I don't include the female one. I thought that one was garbage. But of the franchise Ghostbusters, I do think it is the worst one. But that still doesn't say it's a bad movie. It's still a good movie. It's just the worst of the four, in my opinion.
I pretty well know how it's going to go for me. I think I will like it just because it's Ghostbusters, and I
right.
It's kind of like,
that's how I am.
You know, when Weird Al releases an album, I'm going to like it just because it's Weird Al. You know, it's just the way it is. Whether it's good songs, bad songs, whatever, I'll like it. You know.
Yep, and you still get that jolt of excitement when each former Ghostbuster shows up. You know, like, oh, there's, you know, because I'm not giving anything away, I don't think, by saying this. There's Bill Murray. There's Ernie Hudson. Like, when they first show up on screen, it's like this jolt of excitement. Like, yes, the original Ghostbusters are here.
Yeah.
You ever think Ernie Hudson got a bad rap? Like, he was never liked. He's always the extra guy. He was never like, I mean, he was a Ghostbuster, but he was always like.
Are you talking about Winston, or are you talking about the actor Ernie Hudson?
I'm talking about Winston.
Okay, Winston. Zedmore. Right.
He's, I mean, he didn't have a ton of lines in the first one, you know, and it's like he was like a secondary character, came on later. I don't know.
Yeah, but the beauty of Winston Zedman. Zedmore. Stedman and Zedmore. Yeah, that's right. So the beauty of Winston was he was the everyman. Mm-hmm. You know, you had the three scientists, you had the three guys
that started
the Ghostbusters, but I think that was the beauty, because by the second movie, to me, he was a central character, and that's what I loved about him, is he was just a hardworking dude, and then you find out in the third one, he turned that into like an empire, and now he's just like a billionaire. Like, I loved that storyline for him.
Yeah. I just don't think he had much of the role he had, but as far as like his impact on the first one was like I don't think he had enough lines in the first one. He just didn't say a whole lot to the everyman. Could have been a little more everyman-y with his lines and have more of them.
I think the scene in the mayor's office is,
he was my favorite. My favorite line of his was, I think
that's
it was
big Twinkie. True. This he, man yeah, has
he,
no dick.
He goes, tell him about the Twinkie.
Yeah.
What about the Twinkie?
Yeah, that whole sequence in the mayor's office is what really solidifies him into, like, you know, kind of like, he's kind of like, you know, the dude's rug. It really ties for him together.
Yeah, that's true. All right.
We've become a pop culture podcast all of a sudden.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, we could do a Ghostbusters podcast over the summer.
We're practicing for the
offseason. That's right.
Yeah, right.
Right, we already have baseball movies.
We should Ghostbusters franchise go over the summer where we don't even talk about the Blues. We just talk about pop culture and shit. And I think that'd be fun. We should do that.
I've thought that would be a fun thing to do.
Yeah, let's do it. All right. So talking about Blues hockey, Oscar Sundquist is going to miss the rest of the season with a torn ACL in his right knee. He'll undergo surgery on his right knee following an injury in the March 25th game against the Golden Knights. Sundquist was checked in the corner in the offensive zone by Vegas defenseman Braden McNabb and went down awkwardly midway through the second period. He was helped off the ice by his teammates and Blues head athletic trainer Ray Barilli and did not return to the game. After undergoing a further evaluation, it was determined that Sundquist will require surgery and will be reevaluated in 6 months. Sundquist has played in 71 games for the Blues this season, posting 21 points, 6 goals, and 15 assists, and 32 penalty minutes. So if anybody knows anyone who's had an ACL injury or surgery, they're so weird, because we saw pictures today Luke Horak posted, and undeservedly got some shit for this after the fact. He posted a picture of Sundquist standing on his own power. No crutches, as far as he could see, no boot, and just watching practice.
Oh, yeah.
He was like, well,
on this other glass, right?
Yeah. And he was like, perhaps he's okay. Like, it might not be as worse as we thought. Well, then this came out and everybody's like, this aged well. And it's like, if you know anyone who's had an ACL injury, you can still walk on it. You can still even run on it on certain points, but there's just certain things you can't do. Like, you can't pivot your body at all. You can walk in a straight line. That's it.
Your lateral movement is probably no good. So
yeah. And so for him to catch shit for that, I thought was bullshit.
Oh,
but good for Sundquist getting the surgery now and not waiting. I'm not saying they would have, but clearly they found this issue. Hopefully he'll be back. Let's hope maybe by mid-October.
Do you expect anything less from Twitter, though? I mean,
no.
The fucking toxic culture that, I mean, if you say anything, and you know, he's making an observation. He's not a doctor.
Right.
He's making an observation. Oh, well, he's standing. Maybe it's not as bad. Probably what any of us may think. Oh, he's not on crutches, or I don't see a leg cast. And it's God forbid, you know, you jump on somebody for just reporting what they're seeing, you know, and giving their perspective on what they're seeing. I fucking hate Twitter sometimes.
That was part of the reason I stopped doing what I was doing, because I was just like, I don't think I can handle doing this for my career or the rest of my life. Like, every little thing I say is scrutinized and put under a microscope. It's like,
needlessly,
like you said. It's like you said, the dude is just making an observation. Here's a picture of Sundquist at practice for those of you who can't be here, and he looks okay by my eyes. Like, I don't think that's a bad thing to tweet.
And they wouldn't like it if all he did would be just be like a robot and say, here's a picture of Sundquist. That's it. You know, like, oh, yeah. Oh, thanks for the insight.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right. Damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah. People are morons. Especially, you know, the keyboard warriors, right?
Sitting at home. Keyboard warrior.
Yeah. It's toxic, man.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, so the injury itself sucks for the Blues, but it looks like they are trying Zach Dean in his spot at least tomorrow night. So we'll see how that goes. But
it's like
I think we're going
to. The silver lining, I guess, or the plus to
right.
This.
Right. We're going to see time. A Dean, sure. A Bull Duke. We're going to see these guys get time now, like more than ever during a good playoff stretch run that, you know, is going to teach them a lot of valuable lessons about playing in the NHL. And plus, the Blues is.
10 p.m. Do you know where your children are?
Oh, sorry. Jeff glitched.
I was like reaching for it. I'm like, why can't I click this button? You know, and so the Blues' young kids are going to be getting a shot here. And I think that's, I was going to say the fourth line, there's some skill there with Walker and Torpchenko and maybe even a Sammy Blais if he comes back in the lineup. Like, there's still some skill there. This isn't a Reeves and Porter situation. So he's still going to be playing with guys that might be able to score a couple big goals.
Here's the big thing for me, though. He's not on the power play anymore, which I was done with that a while ago.
Yeah.
So who replaces him? I'm betting it's going to be Kapanen.
Yeah.
I'm betting it's going to be Kapanen. I'd rather it be Bull Duke.
How about in front of the net? Torpchenko?
Torpchenko? Wow. Yeah. Torpchenko would be
Hayes.
Great.
Hayes in front of the net?
Yeah.
I mean, because that was Sundquist's role, right? I mean, it was floating around the front of the net.
Yeah.
So, mostly.
Or let Brad Richards mix it up a little bit. Take some other things, right? You know, try the kids. Try Bull Duke, right? The kid's got a great shot. Get him opportunities, you know, on the man advantage. I totally want to see that. And then, if Minnesota gets bounced this weekend, sign Jimmy Snuggerud, bring him in there. Only play him on the power play.
If they get bounced, yeah.
I think
as soon as they're done, he'll be up here. What the speculation was, the latest he would be here would be with a couple games to go in the season if they go the distance. Yeah, so we'll see.
So Lights On Geometry apparently not a fan of Oscar Sundquist. Bad signing by the clown, which later he says that's Army. Tired of seeing Ott's face, time to send him to another city. And then he says, Sunkiss looks like an 85-year-old man skating. He's not the fleetest of foot, but I like him on the fourth line. I think he's fine. I don't mind him on the fourth line at all.
I don't mind him on the fourth line.
Right. If go back to when we first acquired him and there was commentary about like it takes him, you know, 10 seconds to skate a circle at the NHL level. Like he's never been the most fleet of foot guy, but he's, you know, he is the heart and soul guy. And yeah, to your point, it does appease the grinder fetish that this city has.
Yeah. Right. That's most cities. You know, they like the grinders.
I do think that's a little unfair, though, to be honest. I think he brings more than just your typical grinder. He plays on the power play. That's huge. Not that everyone's a fan of him on the power play, but
I'm not. But
yeah, I agree. I'm not either. But still, he is.
That should be your elite skill on the power play, and he's not there. But
well, and I do like him. He's a good grinder. And I know that's what we're talking about, him being a grinder. But I don't know. As a fourth line center, he's good at faceoffs. He's a good body in front of the net, and I think his skill with the puck, again, not the fleetest of foot, but I think his skill with the puck is above average in terms of fourth line centers.
He also doesn't. I think he doesn't like Steve Ott.
Yeah.
So, which I'm curious as to why. I mean, when the power play was sucking, it's easy to point your finger, but power play has been good since Banister has been here.
Yep.
So
and Brad I didn't like Richards that as a
player. And Brad Richards, right. I
hated Ott as a player, but as a coach, it's hard to gauge how important an assistant coach really is.
Yeah, unless you're in on the practices and on the bench in the game. That is tough. Really, you're looking for, okay, what does the assistant coach control, whether it be the power play, the penalty kill, whatever coach was working with that, and how is that segment of the team doing in a game? And if you're not getting production from that, from what they're responsible for, well, then it reflects badly on the assistant coach. So the problems with this team, I don't think are necessarily with Steve Ott, but you know, you could have said that to start the season when the power play was awful. So I don't know.
Lights on Geometry does say, goes back to him as a player. Yeah. I hated him as a player too. When he came here, I hated him. When they re-signed him to that ridiculous deal that he did not earn, I hated that more. Fuck. But
why not hire Kirk Maltby and
put what?
Get the fuck out of here.
Okay, Lights on Geometry, you're going nuts here. Kirk Maltby, you can handle Kirk Maltby as a player, but not Steve Ott.
No, I think he's saying
an equivalency.
Yeah, he's saying it's no different than putting Maltby on the bench.
Steve Ott, the player, was always a low rent Brendan Morrow to me.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
You know that he was a guy in the Morrow build, and that, you know, that Morrow was one of the gems from the Dallas organization that Armstrong always looked for, and yep. You know, Ott had what he was captain in Buffalo. He has leadership skills, you know, as a player, but. You know, I guess he's similar to Dallas Drake, right? Good leader, not great hockey player.
For about 3 years, was it? He was Steve Ott was like a fantasy hockey.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Great player.
Yeah.
Brandon Morrow, too.
Because Ott put up he put up enough points to be a decent option as a forward, and he got a lot of penalty minutes. So he filled out a number of categories for
If you went
plus minus two,
if you were in an ESPN league with default settings, those two guys were fucking money.
Yep.
Well, I think we're going to take a break. We got plenty more to talk about here, guys. Again, the Blues did sign one of their young rising stars, as well as win a couple important games, get some points in these games. We will talk more about that on the other end of this break. You are listening to Jeff, Kurt, and Bill on Let's Go Blues Radio.
We'll return after these messages.
We've all tried a diet or workout fad at one time or another, but it always ends the same, right? We either lose the weight and then get back to our routine, but then put the weight right back on, or it just simply never takes hold. It's time to move into a habit-based program that focuses on organization and simplicity. Rockin' That Idea Life's Lean 30 lays it all out for you with the correct food to eat, how to meal prep, and even sprinkles in plenty of healthy recipes. With Lean 30, you'll get the full ID Life arsenal, including energy for that needed kick, a tasty Nourish Shake for your needed fiber intake, Slim Plus
Plus, to help control your cravings and provide a metabolic boost, Lean Capsules help bust those sugar cravings, and IED Nutrition gives you the added punch you need that takes the guesswork out of what supplements to take. Join the many who are seeing success and make this your last first day on a new program. Visit rockinthatidealife.com to get started, and remember to email Dustin at rockinthatidealife@gmail.com for an extra 10% off exclusively for Let's Go Blues radio listeners. Start your transformation to the confident, vibrant person you've always wanted to be with rockinthatidealife.com.
St. Louis hockey fans know how it takes a reliable captain and a team of hard workers to achieve major goals. As a police officer and a hockey player, Realtor Mike Burgoyne would wear the C in any situation. As a leader in the home buying or selling process, Mike has surrounded himself with a team of trustworthy inspectors, lenders, and escrow officers that work together more cohesively than Hall & Oates. And as a member of many teams in his life, Mike knows the service our first responders, veterans, nurses, teachers, and yes, even you Let's Go Blues radio listeners provide the community, so he offers special rates to those individuals. Find the value in Mike's leadership and teamwork today by emailing him at mike@strikewithmike.com or calling 314-753-4060. He'll work closely with you and only show you the homes that match your goals. That email again is mike@strikewithmike.com or call him at 314-753-4060 and succeed with your new teammate today.
And now, back to Let's Go Blues Radio,
the longest
running St. Louis Blues podcast with Price, Ponder, and Day.
Hey, real quick. Did you see what Light Sound Geometry said in the chat about? Did you hear
I'm
about,
reading it now.
About what Ruby said on the Philly podcast? Ruby said on the Philly podcast he had to talk to Hitchcock each day on a video call. And apparently, Hitchcock is still kind of coaching this team. I know he's still on the payroll. That's right. Known, but I didn't. Yeah.
That man, really?
According Every to Brube, that's what, and according to Lights on Geometry, that's what
podcast, Lights on Geometry. I'd love to hear that.
Yeah.
Because if that's true, that is odd.
Yeah. I mean, and coaching to what degree? You know, is he just like, did he have to talk to Hitchcock, or it was like a conference call kind of a thing? We're just going over things and Hitchcock's in on it. You know, I don't, I'm what degree are we talking?
Yeah. About? If it's like Berube's like, yeah, I call him because I want his advice every day. Okay. That's a little different. But if it's like, I'm told I have to talk to Hitchcock every day, that is a major issue.
Well,
I hope that's not the case.
It wouldn't surprise me if they have like some kind of a conference call every day. About the previous game or the practice or whatever they're, you know, whatever, or looking forward to the next game, and all the assistant coaches and Armstrong and whoever, you know, Brad Richards, right? So, and I, and with Hitchcock being on the payroll, it doesn't, I mean, I guess it doesn't surprise me.
Do you notice something interesting about this, this thing I just pulled up here, this comment from John Anderson?
Assuming Vegas wins five games, which two do the Blues lose?
Oh, how about okay. The fact that that's a Twitter comment? Have we seen that pop up on here before?
I don't think so.
Interesting. Okay. Apparently you can comment on Twitter. That's yeah, cool. Fantastic.
Yeah. Cause we just see the feed that comes in. There's a little icon next to them all. And that's, yeah, that's the first Twitter comment we've had. That's a good question though. It's a really good question.
Yeah, so he should get comment of the show just for breaking new ground and asking a great question.
Comment of the show, John Anderson. Congrats. You win nothing except my admiration.
Because we've got, was it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So, yeah, the Blues play Dallas, Carolina, Edmonton, and Nashville. That's the toughest teams. San Jose twice, Chicago, Anaheim, Calgary, and Seattle. So you got to figure they've always played Dallas tough, so I wouldn't pick Dallas. Mm-hmm. I'd probably pick Nashville and Carolina.
Yeah,
maybe.
Definitely.
No, you know they're going to do a total Blues thing, and they'll beat Nashville, they'll beat Carolina, but they'll lose to Anaheim and Chicago.
San Jose, back to back.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, that's a great question. Because you look at the schedule, the Blues do have a pretty easy schedule, but there are a few tough teams in there. So, yeah. I'd say Carolina and Nashville. Those are the teams. I mean, I'm sorry. Picks. I'm sorry. The teams that would lose to would be Carolina and, yeah, Nashville.
I'm going to say San Jose and Chicago. Just because that's a total Blues thing to do.
And
Jon
one...
Anderson says Calgary and Edmonton are his picks.
Okay. So they got his question was if Vegas wins five, that would give them a 16-point lead. The Blues would have to go 8-1-1 because they need 17 points.
Right.
So they have to take one of those losses would have to be in overtime.
Oh, that's terrifying.
I know, man. I mean, it all depends on what Vegas does, right? I mean, you got to win your games. If you go 8-2 and Vegas goes 5-5, then Vegas, I think they have a tiebreak. So
Winning Unlimited chimes in the chat here. Says San Jose's 0-6-1 post elimination.
So
under the gold plan, they would not be getting the number one pick.
That is true. They'd be in bad shape.
Yep.
But under the current thing, they're in great shape.
They're in excellent shape. The best thing they can do is lose games. Okay, it looks like Light Sound Geometry says the Nasty Knuckles podcast with Riley Cote and the Philly Equipment Man. I've never even heard of that.
Chris Nyland is not on that. It's called Nasty Knuckles. It's not Chris Nyland's on it.
Yeah, he's a Montreal Boston guy.
I know, but doesn't he have a Knuckles podcast or something?
Yeah,
probably.
Might not have trademarked it though, I guess.
I guess not.
Knuckles and Fisting is the name of his podcast. Like fighting. What do you guys think? Get your heads out of the gutter.
Of the two teams too that he played for, it's like, you know, the two teams that hit each other the most.
Yeah.
And historically in the NHL, right?
And he's revered by most fan bases.
I know.
The most bizarre thing.
He hated getting traded too. He hated it.
That was
Blues have signed defenseman Theo Lindstein to a 3-year entry-level contract. He was drafted by the Blues in the first round, number 29 overall in last year's draft. He's 19, has appeared in 49 games with Brynäs IF in, oh, God, Bill, help me out here. Allsvenskan in Sweden this season, posting 15 points, which is 4 goals and 11 assists, and a plus 13 rating. Earlier this season, the Swedish native starred at the 2024 Under-20 World Junior Championships, leading all tournament defensemen with 6 assists and 8 points overall. He helped Team Sweden the silver medal and earned a nomination to the tournament all-star team. If you remember back just a couple months ago when this tournament happened, he was one of the names we heard, Blues prospects, that had a great tournament, one of the many, actually, that had a great tournament. So should be exciting to see this kid. You know, he's a defenseman. I wouldn't expect to see him over here next year. Maybe the year. Well, actually, I guess maybe he will be over here next year. And he would not have to go to juniors at his age and because he's playing overseas. But I think you would see him in the AHL. I don't think we'll see him in the NHL next year.
How big would it be to have a really good young defenseman in the system? I mean, what this team needs. I mean, just God.
Right. Haven't really had one since Alex Pietrangelo, right?
Haven't had one since Jonas Junlund.
I was hoping
Prunovich,
I was hoping Prunovich might be
that
kind
guy.
Of that guy, you know, the puck mover quarterback, offensive minded guy, but he's all right. But
he's not got the opportunity for all of it. He's still, you know, his development got set back by all the fucking injuries.
Yeah.
He is a top tier, will be, I think, as long as he stays healthy, a top tier quarterback for power play in the NHL. I mean, look what he did his rookie year in that series against Colorado. He absolutely led that power play. And then...
Yeah,
hurt he had to. First preseason game the following year, and that was it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not down on him. I'm just, I think a lot of people are, I'm not so much. Like, he hasn't gotten a ton of playing time yet.
Right,
not probably what he would deserve if he had stayed healthy. So,
Pietrangelo was the last bona fide guy. Then after
he's a suitor.
That's a callback to last week, right? To the intro.
Yeah.
he's got prospects. He's a suitor. But who is it? The guy that we flipped to Ottawa to get the Tarasenko pick, David Rundblad.
Right.
Yeah. So we had drafted Johnson, Pietrangelo, and at that point Petro was going to be the guy. We had Shattenkirk still in the system, so that gave us the opportunity to trade Rundblad. And I think you got what, like 12 games with Arizona.
He played with Chicago, I think, for a short period. Yeah. Arizona, so, he was all over. And then, yeah, he only played maybe 15 games in the NHL.
Unless, I guess my point that I was going to try to make is that unless you're drafting top five with the defenseman, it's, and even then, it's a crapshoot. I mean, look, Eric Johnson's still around, but
Zach Bogosian?
Right.
Yep.
Bogosian went one spot ahead of Petro.
Yep.
Which is crazy. Thank you, yep. Atlanta.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, well, problem was Atlanta was like, oh, this kid's good. Let's bring him up right away. And it's just like, no, that's not how it works with defensemen.
Right. Give Drew Doughty. Time to, right. Yeah. Doughty was the only guy that was ready to make that jump.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, it's rare with defensemen that happens.
They develop later usually, and they peak later. Like people will be down on defensemen returning 30. I think 30 is like right in a defenseman's wheelhouse as far as their peak, their prime.
Right. It's crazy to think people are, you know, you've heard whispers of Colton Parayko is, you know, he's 31 now. He's past his prime.
Someone said he's on the wrong side of 30. I'm like, come on. Jesus Christ.
Disagree. Yeah. Forwards, I can see that argument.
That's
not
different.
Defenseman.
Yeah. Not, yeah.
I think even goalies, I would say, because goalies take a while to develop too. I mean, you look at the most crazy example was Tim Thomas, right? Like he was a nobody until he was in his 30s.
Yeah.
That was
Craig
a national
Anderson
guy.
Was another one.
That was a national guy that said that Parayko was on the wrong side of 30, I think. I think it was a national guy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's terrible. Stupid. Dumb. Bitch. All right. Let's move on. Blues. After the Blues' 4-3 loss to Colorado at home last Tuesday, the Blues got back on track with a 5-2 win over Ottawa Thursday night. This was Zach Dean made his NHL debut, so we got his rookie lap. Played 8:41 on the ice for the Blues. What I always try to say with these kind of, especially defensemen, but forwards too, really, if you're not like a Connor Bedard, I don't really want to notice you that much in your first game, because typically that would be a negative thing. I hardly noticed him out there. I saw him out there a couple times and I was like, oh, there's Dean. But you know, played a nice quiet game.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I guess that is a good thing. If you did notice him, then you'd probably be looking at turnovers and missed assignments and stuff like that. So,
or losing pucks in corners, something like that. And I don't feel like I noticed that at all. With
bad pass across the middle. Boy, you want to get benched as a kid, and then you'll make a bad pass across the middle, gets intercepted.
Yep,
in your own zone.
Oh. But if you're a veteran, you can do it all you want.
Oh yeah, sure. Uh huh. Right. Yeah, yep. Buchnevich, for example, right?
Yeah.
Or Justin Falk, or.
Oh yeah.
Yep. Yeah. No, that's a great point. I actually think that Bolduc is still after toe picking was that the Colorado game where he toe picked and there was the turnover and they scored. I think he's still paying the price in the to the coaching staff not getting as much.
Lots of things to talk about with this game. We're not going to go in too depth, but again, Jake Neighbors, I thought, had a really nice game. 2 goals in this one. Jordan Kyrou, a goal and 2 assists. Brandon Saad, a goal and an assist. Saad has been playing his best hockey, I think, down the stretch. We're going to talk about him plenty in this game. But I think the person we mostly need to talk about, Joel Hofer, 37 saves on 39 shots. Thought he played very well. I thought Anton Forsberg had a decent game, too, in goal for Ottawa. But sends interim coach Jacques Martin. Yes, that Jacques Martin, I believe he's 147 years old. He said, quote, I think he, talking about Hofer, was the difference in the hockey game. There's no doubt when you look at the number of chances we had, I think it was 22-12 in our favor. Yeah, there was multiple great saves by Joel Hofer. And I saw, this is the first time I've been looking for it all year. And maybe I'm just looking in the wrong places. I've been looking for somebody nationally to say, why are we not talking about Joel Hofer as a Calder Trophy candidate?
I was just going to mention that. Yeah.
I mean, the kid is putting out great numbers. His numbers are matching Bennington's, and he's playing great. Like,
he's up there with the some of the better goalies in the NHL.
In these yes, it's Ottawa, but this is a big game. It's late in the year. You need wins right now, and you can trust to roll out your rookie goalie, and he's going to put out his best effort, and that's what he's doing right now. I just love the way he's playing.
Yeah, I mean, we talked early on in the season about some of the questionable decisions, like, you know, why is that West Coast swing? Why is he getting the first game and not Bennington? And, you know, what, just there was some weird sequencing. But as the season's rolled along, and we've talked about it on you know, many episodes of the show this year, he's been used more as a 1B than a 2. And he's earned it. Right. There were a few minor growing pains, had a couple of not great games. But now, you know, if Bennington went down injured, I'm not panicking. Right. It's, you know, do I want Bennington in there if we somehow make it into the playoffs? Yes. But man, I'd also really like to see what Joel Hofer can do.
Shades of Husso. I mean, as far as like the vibe, like when Husso had his nice run. When Bennington was not playing well,
but it took Husso so long to get there.
Yeah,
right? Bennington,
and then Husso fell off too.
Right.
So late in the season, and in the playoffs, and then in Detroit, he has not been very good. So.
Right. And yeah, that's, I mean, that kind of makes Doug Armstrong look like he finally made a second smart move about a goalie.
There were a lot of people that wanted to move on from Bennington and keep Husso that year. Holy shit.
Well, I was pretty close.
Yeah. I wanted to keep both. I wanted them to re-sign Husso.
Yeah.
But
that's where I was.
I think we're seeing why they moved on from Husso right now. This is why. They knew this was coming.
Yeah.
They made the right call and goal for the first time, right? Like, get rid of Husso, let Hofer get his chance, and that's exactly what's happening.
And signing Bennington to a longer contract, I think, was the right move.
I agree.
For the first time ever, right? They've signed a goalie to a long-term contract that they should have, I guess. So,
Light Sound Geometry is laughing at me, apparently. He says, LOL, Ponder, Calder equals Bedard. First of all, I'm not saying Hofer wins the Calder. I would like to see him in the discussion. I think is a important piece for a young rookie to get the confidence he needs. Second of all, I think Brock Faber and the Minnesota Wild would like to have a conversation with you, Light Sound Geometry.
Exactly.
That kid is fucking incredible. And he's been everything Minnesota needs as a defenseman.
Right. I think to Bedard's detriment, I think there were people who believed that he could single-handedly put that team on his back his rookie year to make the playoffs. And those kinds of expectations, especially after getting the broken jaw, they've just weighed too heavily. And Faber is having an insanely good what rookie comes into this league and leads the team in ice time every night? He does it with positive possession play, right? He's not a stay-at-home defenseman. I mean, we'll talk about the goal that he scored to tie the game, right? He has great instincts, pinches, and contributes.
Yeah, and it's on geometry. I was just going to say similar. He says his nerd numbers are insane. Yeah, his analytic numbers. And again, this is where I think analytics comes into play. I think it helps you determine, is this guy what I'm actually seeing? And I think with analytics, it's showing he is fucking great for Minnesota. He's putting up, I mean, he's leading the play. He's breaking up plays. He's starting the offense. You know, Bill mentioned he scored a big goal against St. Louis.
Yeah, but that stuff a lot of that stuff doesn't show up in box scores. And that's not the sexy stuff. You know, Bedard's almost a point a game guy.
Right.
So
I know
that's what's going to win him the Calder.
Right.
So,
but I agree
with you. I agree with you that there's intangibles that never get the credit that they deserve in voting for awards. And also, and when you're fucking looking at analytics, so many intangibles that they don't factor in. So, which we've talked about so much.
Yep. I would love to see a Calder voting of, it'll probably be Bedard, Faber, and Hofer. Like, I would love to see Hofer in that discussion.
Yeah, I'd love to see him in the discussion. I don't think there's any way. He could play every game the rest of the season, not give up a goal, and he'd still come in second at best.
Right. I think it'll be the same as when Binnington was a rookie. The reason Binnington didn't get it, they said, is because he came in too late in the year. And so they gave it to the guy who was there all year, even though Pedersen really didn't show up the second half of the year.
Right.
That's bullshit. Because
I agree,
it shouldn't matter if he came in January or not. He put this team on his back, and he carried them to near the top of the conference by the end of the season when they were last. And then you know the rest. I mean, the cup champion. You're not supposed to factor in playoffs though. But still, I don't care.
Right.
That he was.
Well, I mean, just Jordan Binnington alone.
Jordan Binnington that season was the most valuable player in the NHL. He didn't win the award.
Right.
I think he should have been in talks for
not even
MVP.
Question. It's not even a question that he was the most valuable player.
MVP and Conn Smythe.
Yep.
Yep.
Agree.
Yeah. You know what? If they hadn't scored that goal on him late in the game seven, that's a tie. It's a toss up between him and Riley. It's a toss up.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That I think the emotional edge goes to him for pitching the shutout in a game seven. Mm-hmm. Right. That's the stuff of legend.
And that shot to beat him. Unworldly shot. That thing was, I mean, no goalie stopping that. It was bar down through traffic,
right?
Yep.
It was bar down through traffic. Yeah, that was fantastic shot.
Yep. Well, next game, talking about Jordan Binnington, he takes the net back. The Blues beat the Minnesota Wild 5-4 in OT Saturday night. There was 5 lead changes in this game. It was a very back and forth seesaw battle. Jordan Binnington, 30. God damn it, Bill. I'm so sorry. We will get back to this game. I think this is where we need to start inserting our save of the week right with the game we're talking about. So we are going to jump into our save of the week with Bill Day at 13:50 of the first period against Ottawa. Joel Hofer makes a huge save on Jacob Chychrun. Take her away, Bill.
All right. Is the screen large enough? Do I need to make it bigger?
Work?
You want me to make it bigger? You want me to make
it bigger?
Bigger,
baby. Let's see. All right. Let's see it bigger.
Go big or go home.
I love it bigger.
Oh wait, wrong screen. God damn it.
Bottom third from the right on the bottom. The little arrows pointing the opposite way.
I know what
there
it is.
There you go. There you go, sweetheart.
But I also need my script.
There you go. Oh, I'm sorry.
You're ruining it for me.
Let
the
him
beauty
do his
of
thing.
A live show here.
Yes.
Let him do his
the
thing.
The beauty of this.
Leave
whole thing.
Bill alone.
I am gonna play it from where it is here.
That's
all right. So save of the week, as Jeff mentioned, goes to Joel Hofer in the Ottawa game. We're gonna watch this come through the first time. And you know, to borrow a phrase from Kurt, you know, at first glance, this whole thing looks like a bunch of monkeys trying to fuck a football, right? Just pucks flopping everywhere. You know, what's the goalie doing? But let's take another look at this. Look at this insanely great pass. First, Brady Tkachuk with that sweet pass, then Chychrun scoop shot pops the rebound up in the air. Like how do you not skate past that and actually get that? And then Tkachuk gets position on Parayko while the puck's in the air and angles himself so that he can knock the puck back across. And look, Letty does a flyby, but who doesn't? Chychrun's right there, snipes it back at the net. But the most athletic play of all here, Joel Hofer. Watch right here on the slow-mo. He picks up Brady Tkachuk's stick and sees it go the other way, barrel rolls back around, throws the pads up, gets him in front of the puck, keeps it out of the net. This was an insanely talented play by 3 elite athletes, culminating with the save of the week from Joel Hofer. I mean, God, it every time I do one of these breakdowns, I'm like, oh my God, I just tore three abs watching what he just did. It's insane. Like, and when you get back to that, the overhead view where just watch his face, watch his eyes are on it. And he's actually, I think, following Kachuk's stick. He's not following the puck. He saw where Kachuk's stick went and then does the barrel roll to get himself in position. Just insanely talented play right here from three great players. Joel Hofer, dude, man, I love that guy.
I was amazed at that pass from Kachuk. Because any other player in the world is just like, I just need to try and chop this into the net. I don't care where my angle's at. He knew where Chicken was. He put it right on his tape, and he knocked it out of the air. Like,
impressive. What I love about this sequence and Hofer's play here is that I love the all hands on deck goal mouth scrambles. You know, it's chaos. You really see what goalies are made of when they've got to scramble around. And it's no longer, okay, you know, whether, you know, the opponent is passing the puck around, you're trying to look through screens, trying to keep your angle, trying to keep your position between the post where you are. And it's none of that. It's all reaction. It's all athleticism. It's just a quickness from side to side. It's just, you know, like how much can he bend his arm, bend his spine, you know, to make this save and flop around. It's just, you know, and to stay within himself and not slide out of the goal, right?
The control, right?
Yes.
Like, I can make that spin, but I'm probably going to, like, barrel roll to the corner or something.
Right.
Yeah. That's what you see. That's what you see what goalers are made of. Those chaotic scrambles in front where they keep track of the puck and they're just trying to play as big as possible and take away as much of that as possible, wherever that puck's bouncing around to. So it's fun to watch.
Yeah.
Yep. And I'll add too that you mentioned the vision, Bill. Like, the fact that he doesn't take his eye. I mean, I think you're right. I think he does take his eye off the puck, but he's still like, okay, how are the players reacting around me? And he notices that Kachuk whipped his stick across, and it's like, oh, okay. And you see his head turn, and it's like, oh, okay, I need to look this direction because the puck's coming from this way now. Like, just the wherewithal to be there for that. I mean, I play hockey all the time. I don't think I can track the puck that's crazy.
Yeah. No, to this moment, my neck is like in spasm. Just thinking what it takes physically to do what Hofer did in that sequence. And yeah, I mean, that they're going back through the games and picking which save it was, God, this was so, I mean, he had really, really good saves throughout this game, but this was by far the best save of the best goaltending performance of the week.
Yeah. I'm going to piggyback on Light Sound Jamish's comment here. Love seeing neighbors diving to block the shot. Yeah. He comes sliding in to try and help out there. It's just a fantastic effort, which is what you see on a nightly basis from him. Trying to do whatever he can on the back check to help out.
Yep.
So
yeah, I agree. Jake Neighbors has thrust himself into one of my top three favorite players right now.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just been incredible
for sure. And you know, the unfortunate part about that sequence to me was Nick Leddy. Like, what the fuck is he doing? He thought he was following Chychrun into the corner, and Chychrun posted up and took the pass. And Letty's like, oh, wait, there's a play behind me.
And
Neighbors and Shen are both going down in like pad save style to try to get something on it.
I know I've said on the show, I'm not a Leddy fan.
That's on him, 1,000 games.
We're getting ready to talk good about him. And I will add, I think skating offensively, he's great. But God, defensively, he is a fucking train wreck. He never has his guy. We saw a backdoor play. I think it's in this upcoming game, right? Mm-hmm. Where I don't remember who it was, but somebody scored on him and Parayko. Parayko was trying to play the pass, and Leddy wasn't doing anything. He was just standing there. Defensively, he's a train wreck. I'm not a Nick Leddy fan.
He and Justin Falk our liabilities right now.
Yes.
On the defensive side of things.
Safe had a bad play in this game too that led to a goal.
Money Puck had the Blues, the Senators, winning this game 74.2% of the time in 1,000 game simulations.
Yeah, I ran it a couple times while I was watching, or after the game was over and I was watching another game. And yeah, every time it was Ottawa on top, at least by 65%.
Yeah.
Yeah. They came to play that night. But yeah, Joel Hofer like delivered like that, and that, you know, to set the stage for the big two games, like that's the game you can't lose. They entrusted it to him and he was fucking lights out.
Yep. Agree. Well, we will officially move on to the Minnesota game. Thank you, Bill. Always an insightful and exciting conversation with Save of the Week. I'm so happy we implemented that. We owe everything to Ken Morris, but you get nothing, Ken Morris, for coming up with that idea. Blues beat Minnesota 5-4 in overtime Saturday night. Five lead changes in this game, as I already said. Nick Leddy plays in his 1,000th NHL game. He is only, which this was kind of surprising to me, he's only the 14th player to be wearing a Blues jersey while playing in his 1,000th game. With all the players the Blues have gotten later in their careers, I was surprised to see they've only had 14 suit up for 1,000 in a Blues jersey. So, and he did get an assist in this game. So, a memorable one definitely for Nick Leddy. Neighbors scored a big goal, I thought, in this game. Again, Jake Neighbors, we can't speak highly enough of him. I thought, so he scored the first goal of this game. I loved it. As a two-on-one with Thomas, but we mentioned him earlier, Brock Faber blocked the pass, but Shen trailed the play. He got it on net. Fleury made a nice save, but Neighbors had to contort his body and wrap it around Faber to get the rebound on his backhand as he's diving and falling. He does so, and he got a quick shot on net. I mean, you know, that wasn't just a, I'm going to poke it at the net and hope it just sneaks through the goalie. It was a laser on the backhand, and it went under Fleury. He couldn't react fast enough, and just a big goal in a big game. I think at this point, you guys would probably agree, I think this at this point is the biggest game of the season. We'll talk about the next game. I think that overtakes it. But at this point, you had to win this game against Minnesota. So to go on the board first was massive for the Blues.
Yeah, the Blues were up on Minnesota by a point. Is that right? Going into this game? I believe
sounds
so.
Right. Yeah. I believe that's right.
And you can't, I mean, almost every game from this point forward, well, Ottawa actually was a must-win game for this. You can't lose to Ottawa, like we talked about. And Minnesota, you're right there with them neck and neck. You can't lose to them. And you had a big game coming up next, right, against Vegas. So you wanted to secure this win. So this was a massive game. And Money Puck didn't like the Blues in this game, but we can get to that at the end.
Yeah. So Jake Neighbors is not the only one who scored a big goal. Jordan Kyrou comes up big, scores a hat trick in this game. And Pavel Buchnevich also adds three assists in this game. The thing I liked about Kyrou, and we've talked good, bad, neutral about him all year, he was focused in this game. I felt like his bullshit with unable to receive good passes, unable to control the puck, unable to win puck battles in the corners. Like, his inability with the stick has been so prevalent this season. This was Jordan Kyrou of 2 years ago that we saw in this game. He was receiving passes. He was making plays. And most importantly, he was firing the puck. I think that is where his best attribute is. Get the puck on net. Shoot it. Don't make the extra move. Shoot. Don't deke. Shoot. He did this game.
He played with a purpose in this game. Mm-hmm. And he got better as the game went on. You know, his second period, third period especially. I mean, he was he had jump. He had determination when he was skating with the puck. Stuff that doesn't show up in the box score at all. But just watching him and his determination on the ice was so much more obvious in this game. And you're just like, yes, he's got the killer instinct. He's got the eye of the tiger.
Control.
He's got the eye of the tiger in this game. And you can see it. Yeah, that's you know, we could talk about analytics all to death, and we do, and that shit doesn't show up ever. Determination of a player on the ice, and he made shit happen. And I don't know where that Kyrou is on most nights. I don't know why. I'm not expecting the guy to put up a hat trick every night. That's ridiculous. But you know, or to even play with that energy every single shift, that's he'd be dead. But you know, bring that at some point every game. You know, bring that for half a period or one period a game when it comes down to it. Let's see it. That we haven't seen this more than a handful of games all season.
No,
I'll just add real quick to your point. And I'm not trying to make a comparison to Alex Ovechkin here, but if you watch Ovechkin in his prime, that's what he would do. He would pick his moments to just be like, this is where I'm going to go balls to the wall and I'm going to score a fucking goal. Like, you could see it when he would take the ice for his next shift. That's what we need to see in Kyrou more often. We saw it in this game. He stepped on the ice at certain points and you could just see the drive that he had and the skating. I mean, again, he's got lightning speed. And we saw it in this game. He's firing up the middle. He's firing up the boards. He's getting shots on net. He was determined to fucking score goals in this game. And it goes back to the Doug Armstrong quote from last year. I think it's a foregone conclusion when he said the thing about too many guys are worried about their YouTube highlights. Like, this was not a game Jordan Kyrou was worried about his YouTube highlights. He was worried about winning the fucking game. And that's what you want to see.
Yeah, no, he was like, go back to the Ottawa game. You know, we talked so much about Hofer. Kyrou was great in the Ottawa game. Goal, two assists, right? Set up the first two goals. Great pass from behind the net to Parayko for the second goal. But he started, to me, he played the Ottawa game with a purpose. And then he gets into this game and, you know, he was dialed in. And that we don't see that enough from him. I will say, however, that, you know, and I have to give a shout out to Marc-Andre Fleury for the Gilles Meloche tribute with the Wild wearing their North Stars tribute jerseys. That the first time I saw that helmet, I'm like, oh my God, this takes me back to my youth. Huh. Gilles Meloche, that was his helmet. But he made a Gilles Meloche-like 80s goalie effort on Kyrou's second goal. The shot from way out high, that shouldn't go in.
Yeah.
But oh, yeah, Kyrou shot the puck.
Yeah.
Right?
And he's got a hard shot.
And how many goals have we seen Ovechkin score? Again, hate to make the comparison, but like, how many times have we seen Ovechkin score like that should not have gone in the net?
Well,
but it's because he shoots 20 times a game.
Well,
they're gonna go in.
He's also, it's also a one timer from the near boards where the goalie's sliding across. It's not hard to understand the concept of when you get a goalie moving, holes open up, and you know, if he slides across and gets set, that takes a lot of holes away for a shooter. You one time it, and the puck is coming at the goalie and at him while he's still moving. There's all kinds of holes, and that's Ovechkin has made a living doing that. He's got a hard, accurate one-timer from, you know, 20 feet out, which is fantastic. These jerseys we talked about, so many people want the Wild to go to these colors permanently. I'm one of them. I love these colors. Same thing with the Blues and their heritage colors. Mm-hmm. Use them every game. You've got a home. You've got an away. Use them. Give the fans what they want. You know, Minnesota should be using these jerseys every game.
Minnesota switches those jerseys full time, Subway has to be their jersey sponsor, right?
100%.
Absolutely have to be.
Yeah. I know that, you know, the franchise is in Dallas now, but who cares?
They dropped the colors before they left, right? They were Dallas, the Dallas black, green, and gold.
Yeah.
It's a different gold, right? And that the Stars had adopted that before they left Minnesota. And that was a shame. Fuck the Guns.
Matt Harris, what was that again?
Oh, go ahead. I'll pull it back up.
I was reading it. I've heard that the team would regularly listen to the podcast for advice, at least until allegations hit. Okay.
Yeah. Well, gotcha. We got to stop with those allegations, guys.
Yeah. You just give the fans what they want with these jerseys. I mean, some of these jerseys the teams have, they're the best jerseys. They only wear a handful of times a year, and it's a crime. I don't understand it. Maybe if they sell more that way, fuck that. It's not even close. Which jersey is the better jersey? Use your best jerseys as your everyday jerseys.
I'm on the opinion that teams I love, was it Cleveland or Denver? One of the NBA teams is using like 8 different jerseys this season. I'm all for that. I say just fucking mix it up, wear different jerseys every game. I don't give a shit. The more, the better. You're going to sell more. Fans love it. Why not? I'm all for it.
If the Blues went to Heritage as their number one, I'd want to see that almost every game. At least for a number of years, until I'm used to it. It pops, and they use this darker blue, which is fine for their normal jerseys, but it's not near as electric on the ice as their Heritage blues are. And the same thing with the Minnesota jerseys, same exact thing.
I like both teams' jerseys, all of them they use. So I'm not gonna get heated about this, but I do agree with you. I do think the Heritage jerseys are a little nicer.
You know what's interesting too is that Minnesota's regular jerseys, they're darker and more muted. They're not as vibrant, you know, as these are. Like the Blues, their Heritage is more vibrant. I don't know why they think that the their regular everyday jersey has to be more muted and dulled down. Why can't it be the electric one that they trot out there that people love?
Winning Unlimited wanting to start an argument, apparently, and I'm all for it, baby. I'm with you.
During games, sure.
Pride jersey should be worn in games, 100%.
Absolutely.
I love the idea.
Why not?
That'd be so cool.
Why not? You see it. You see baseball. They have like on 4th of July, they have Stars and Stripes jersey logo, like their logos are Stars and Stripes on the crest and stuff. They do all kinds of stuff like that.
Hockey fights cancer, right? They wear them only for warm-ups. No, wear them for the game.
Yeah.
More meaningful. Dude, I've always said that, like, because those are beautiful. The purple, like every team has like the same kind of design for the hockey fights cancer. Yeah. Wear them in the game. Why not have the other team wear their whites? Why not?
Yeah, I don't. NHL's weird.
Or have both teams wear them. Wear like a home and an away. Like the other team wears a white with like purple stripes down the sleeves. I don't know. I think that would be cool.
Yeah, with the pride thing, you're going to get pushback from for other reasons.
Right.
From people, which is
but
a shame.
I'm with you.
It's a shame.
Yep. I think we're all with you on that. That would be really cool because I do love the Pride jerseys.
Yeah. Some of them are really cool. I mean, it's like, that's just neat. That's just cool.
Oh, my wife got one of City's from last year, the City Pride jersey. That thing was beautiful. Love it. All right. So Brandon Saad, again, we mentioned him earlier. We're going to mention him again, and we'll mention him again later. He scores the OT winner. First thing I want to comment on, how about Kasperi Kapanen getting some love in OT? Obviously, Bannister loved what he saw in the game and put Kapanen out there with Saad and was it Falk? Yeah, Falk. Yep. And I'll call out too, you know, obviously Saad skated the puck up the ice, made a nice play, split the D, slid it under Fleury's pads. But Jordan Binnington making the right play here. The Blues kind of fumbled the puck, and it was kind of annoying. Falk kind of lost control of it, and there was a little bit of a scramble in front, and then he slid it back to Binnington. Yeah. That's what it was.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking of another goal. But, slid it back to Binnington. I'm thinking about Vegas's OT winner, which we'll talk about. He slid it back to Binnington, and Binnington had the state of mind, even though the guy was coming right at him and was right in his grill. Slid it over to Falk. Falk finds Saad. Saad skates it up. Just a very mindful play by Binnington to keep the play moving and kind of catch Minnesota off guard. And Saad puts it in the net. Blues win 5-4.
And who is it? The Minnesota player does a flyby of Binnington. If he stops at the doorstep.
Yeah, it was Boldy.
There's a faceoff there. He doesn't give the puck to Falk. Yeah. So
Boldy does the flyby. And then Boldy winds up being the guy who's back. And for whatever reason, as the Blues enter the zone on the right side, he stayed way off to the left instead of pinching off the center. And he gave up the lane. And, you know, one of my favorite things about the game was the synchronicity of the broken sticks across the crossbar between Boldy and Flurry. That was so fucking fun to watch.
Yep. My daughter pointed that out. She's the goalie smashed the stick over the goal. I'm like, the Boldy did too. And both sticks shatter. It's great.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, Boldy, that's a learning.
Yeah, just like that.
It's not their money.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it is.
No, it's not.
Players buy their own sticks. Yeah, they do.
Really?
Players buy their own sticks. Last I heard, a few years ago,
I've heard the opposite.
I've heard players buy their own sticks.
Well, they make millions of dollars, so it's not a big deal to them.
Sounds like a summer show topic, possibly.
Yeah. I think that's a learning experience for Boldy. I think he came off the ice. Coach pulled him probably aside and said, "What the hell were you doing there, son?" So
you just cost that us this playoffs, you prick.
Oh. Yeah, right. You're sitting.
I just looked it up. It says, I'm wrong. The question of whether NHL players purchase their own sticks is an interesting inquiry, and the aspects related to the team partnerships and player preferences provide insight into this. And unlike what would appear to be the case, NHL players do not pay for sticks. They are the responsibility of the team. That's not what I heard, though. Okay.
You should have read that. The way that was written, like, that needed an English accent.
It sounded like it was AI written, though, too. Yeah. To be honest.
It does.
Possibly.
Okay. And the Reddit does say that they do pay for sticks. That's okay. All right. Well, I'm not sure where I heard that then.
Kurt was wrong. Jeff was right. Let's just remember wrong. That. Yep. It can happen. It can happen to you.
I did hear it somewhere, though, a couple different times. So I'm not.
Oh, I believe you. Yeah. But yeah, I've working in the industry as long as I did for Total Hockey and X Hockey products. We did always hear that players did. They did not buy their own own sticks, or some Which of them do sense. Buy their own undergarments. Like Brandon Saad, he has that what's that called? The War Road.
Oshie's line of neck guard.
I'm pretty sure he did buy that. So that's the kind of thing they do by themselves. Bill, I saw you grab a stick. What do you got there?
Yeah, so this stupid boom microphone.
It's a Bodor is what it is.
It's a Bodor, it is. I'm pretty sure John Gillies paid for this, and then the Blues made 100% profit when I bought it off of them. But yeah, this is John Gillies. 32, nice. right there on nice. The shaft.
Very nice. He had one great game for the Blues.
We have,
I believe, against Anaheim.
Yeah, that sounds about
was
right.
Was that game? Yep. So the Blues, now we mentioned Minnesota being the biggest game of the year. Well, now it is the Vegas Golden Knights Monday night, biggest game of the year. No question in anyone's mind. But unfortunately, they did lose this one, 2-1 in overtime. There was a pregame ceremony for Nick Leddy for his 1,000th game. Since this was the first home game, so this was his 1,000th and first NHL game. He did receive the typical silver stick. He got the jersey. McInnes gave him something. Was that the jersey? I don't remember. He got a bunch of cool shit.
McInnes gave him the stick. Armstrong gave him the jersey.
That's right. And then you got the watch from the players. That's right. Yeah.
The fingerprint stick. Thinking of some gloves. White Keeper of the Cup gloves. Because that silver stick has fingerprints all over it. Like,
oh yeah.
Some white gloves.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've actually seen that. I've seen one of those sticks. I can't remember whose it was. It might have been Mike Modano's. And you could see fingerprints on the very top of it. And it's like, oh, don't handle that without gloves on. What are you doing? Know.
It's on the TV. All the lights are shining. It's all reflective. It's gonna show big time on TV, and it did.
Yep. So a lot happened in this game. This is the game that Sundqvist got hurt. He got hurt at 9:50 of the second period. He was hit in the corner by Braden McNabb. Bannister provided no update, but obviously we got an update today. Kyrou got an assist, giving him four goals, three assists, 7 points. During a 7-game point streak, I thought, again, we talked about it already a little bit, goaltending in this game, Jordan Binnington, I thought, played a good game, 33 of 34 in this one. It's just Logan Thompson was that much better. Logan Thompson was great. He had 31 saves on 32 shots. And just one of the saves he made was early in the third period. Kevin Hayes had a breakaway. Real nice puck strip, I thought, at the point. Clear breakaway, which it kind of has to be if you're Kevin Hayes and skate as fast as he does. He pulled the move. I mean, just a beautiful one of those kind of the Forsberg where you come in one way and then you come back the other way with one hand and try to poke it in. Thompson read it perfectly and did the splits and kept the puck out. So again, just a great goaltending performance from Logan Thompson, and Blues dropped this one mostly, I think, because of him.
Yeah.
Oh, no, for sure.
Logan Thompson was by far, like, when I was going back through to pick what save of the week was, my initial thought was Binnington on Eichel in the third in this one. But
yeah.
No, I couldn't give it to Binnington in a game where he was the second best goalie. Logan Thompson, from the opening faceoff, first shift of the game,
yep.
He robbed Oscar Sundqvist. I mean, the guy was on fire.
Oh.
And you know, was it Rivers that said, like, very early on, you know, that Aiden Hill's injured, and so you got their backup, you got to take advantage of this. And it's like, you know, Logan Thompson, you know, really, it's
not, I didn't think
backup as a yeah, you know, a 1B.
I didn't think Hill has looked pretty good lately. I've been watching more of Vegas's games lately, and he's allowed some shitty goals. I forgot which game it was that it was a back and forth game between Vegas and someone. They lost because of Hill. Yeah, two softies in the third period.
Right. It kind of seems like they've been trying to maybe learn from previous years and stick with one guy, and they're sticking with the wrong guy. Based on Thompson's performance last night, I mean
who played
game against Ottawa.
Who played against Nashville? Was it Thompson or was it
Hill? No? Hill's injured, so
yeah,
it was Thompson again.
I didn't think it was Thompson. I thought it was.
Was it the?
Because that was a back to back game.
Was it third string?
Yeah, because it wasn't Thompson. It was whoever that was, because it was a back to back game, and I want to say it was not Thompson.
I'm pulling it up right now.
Although I've been once wrong in this podcast already, so what's two?
What's one more, right?
I will say, while you're looking that up, Bill, that against Minnesota, Money Puck had the Blues losing that game in their Dessert Eliminator. And in this game, they had the Blues winning in this Dessert Eliminator. So in the three games that we've talked about, the Dessert Eliminator, shocker, is 0-3.
Yep. So. And I'll say that I ran this one twice and posted the results here.
Yeah. Well, I just ran it too.
In our outline.
I got the same amount. Same
50.7 for the Blues to win, and then 53.1 the second time. So
I just ran it and I got 52. So yeah, same thing.
Yep. So
yeah,
it's just
Yuri Patera.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
So and so the goal side scores. Fantastic play by Kairu to get the puck
Kairu
up to that's what I said, Kairu to get the puck up to Chen, who nice, beautiful cross ice backhand right on Saad's tape, and then shovels it in.
And Thompson got a piece of it,
underside of his glove.
Yeah.
Almost got it.
Almost. But, that would have been
man,
a save of the year candidate, right? That would have been ridiculous.
Oh, especially considering the game situation, the time of the game, and what the game meant. Absolutely.
Right.
So this game obviously going bonkers, and the Blues damn near won the game in regulation. They had a few more chances in the closing minutes. They were all over Vegas in this third period. Which I didn't think the first two periods were very good by the Blues. They didn't play. I didn't think they played it very good in the first two periods. They came on in the third, tied it. And then, you know, and the Blues in overtime, but that I thought they could have been better in the first two periods.
I agree. And I did not like Buchnevich's choice of shot on the penalty shot he had in overtime. I thought it was telegraphed. I thought he let Thompson see where he was going to put the puck, because he kind of made a deke, and then he like did a little kind of like a half wind up and then shot it. Like, didn't really, like, it seemed like he was going to fake, but then he shot anyway. And it just, to
you
me, and Bill, you can tell me if I'm wrong. Like, I feel like he allowed Thompson to see right where he was going to put that puck.
Yeah, he I think what his intention was to sell upper glove and get Thompson to raise his glove, but he didn't sell it. And Thompson read it and got that, like, getting that hand down as quickly as he did. He saw it in Buchnevich's eyes where he was going to.
So, play. And that's a situation where Buchnevich is not reading the play in front of him. He is trying to anticipate what's going to happen and shoot it there anyway. And and that didn't happen. I thought, you know, coming in, if you're going to do the little fake deke thing like he did, I don't know why not pulling it back on your backhand and then trying to flip it.
That was
the same thing.
That seems like the much better move there.
Right.
If you're going to try and fake forehand,
I thought he could have stunned him too if he would have like done the same move where he kind of lifted his stick and then still went to the forehand and went further. I thought that I still think Thompson makes the save there, but I think it's a better opportunity for you to try and catch him and then get a shot, you know, a split second later. I just don't think he read what was in front of him.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. He put Thompson off balance, and if he pushes either side, it's going to be hard for Thompson to recover. I mean, look at the bounce he had to make to you know, hold on to the puck after he caught it.
It was a good save. It was a really good save.
It was a good save.
Yeah, he kept his glove down. He did a great job. I'm with you. It's like, I bet you if he had it do over again, he's like, nah, that was not the best choice.
Yeah, Buchnevich. So the game winner, this was where I kind of got a little pissy with this team. I did not like the way they handled it. Was Falk and Shen, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were going with Marchessault down the ice, and they had a chance to steal it from him and turn the other way, but it seemed like Falk and Shen just kind of lost sight of where the puck was, and then Marchessault just followed the play, brought it behind the net. Got it to who's the winner? Who scored the winner?
Marchessault got the winner.
Oh, it was Marchessault.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then he just had all the time in the world to skate in front and get a good shot on Bennington. Bill, I know we should not listen to anyone on Twitter. I thought this was in terms of goalie versus shooter, I thought this was a good goal for Marchessault. I don't think it was a bad goal on Bennington. I saw some people blaming Bennington. What are your thoughts?
No, I mean, you want your goalie to, you know, come back and make the big save after the penalty shot save, right? And this is the first shot that he faced. I thought that, you know, Shen and Falk, you know,
they've got to grapple
the puck, and then both of them can't chase him behind, and Kyrou caught himself too late. I thought if Kyrou would have just gone to the other side, he can cut off Marchessault coming out, but he thought about trying to swing behind the net. And then, you know, he got himself in between. He was trying to cut off, was it Theodore coming down the slot. And
well, if he cuts off Marchessault, then the pass goes to Theodore in the slot, who's wide open. Yeah.
Yeah. But if he doesn't push down to the goal line, initially and goes to the other side, he cuts him off and the pass isn't there, right? He can force him wide, but didn't happen. Yeah.
No. And to me, I 2-on-1 behind the Blues goal, especially 3-on-3. So you've only got one guy out high, and even Kyrou was kind of at the side of the net. So they were all deep. You got to come up with that puck. You can't, if you lose the puck battle, then you're in trouble for a few seconds until you can get back in front, and that's how I lost the game. You 2-on-1 battle behind the net. Shen gets pinned between who was the forechecker? Between the Knight player and the boards. So he's just like Shen's almost out of the play. So it's just Falk back there digging, and then it's scooped up by Marchessault, who just curls around and scores. I didn't like the Blues getting outworked behind the goal and lost. No. That's where the game was lost for me.
It was William Karlsson that originally had the puck behind the net. And then he slid it over to Marchessault, who was open. But
I got between him and the boards, which is not where you want to be. You want to be behind. Yeah. You want to be that's it was just, it just
well, you mentioned behind the net even before that when Carlson was trying to carry the puck in, they got the puck away from him, but he got it back, and it just seemed like Falk and Shen just didn't know where the puck was, and it was like, in that moment, you had just got to get that puck.
Who was that? Was Shen? That was because they came in and they did. Falk poked it away. Shen grabs it at the logo, the digital logo, and he's got it. And he's got Kyrou outside the blue line. If he could have given him a quick pass back, it's 1-on-1. But that's
that could have been a turn and burn the other way.
But still, Shen's got the puck on his stick. He's skating into the zone though, and it's like, yeah, you got the puck, you lost the puck, then you got a 2-on-1 battle behind the goal, and you lose that battle. You deserve to lose the game. I mean, you lost those two sequences there that cost you the game. It is what it is. There were tons of chances in this game the Blues had that may not have had to go to overtime, but whatever. I mean,
talked about Thompson playing. Thompson
was he was amazing. He was amazing. Yeah.
Right.
You could also say the Blues should have probably had a couple more goals.
Yeah, right? I agree. I mean, how many times have we said that on this show? Like, how many times are we going to give the goalie kudos and not give the Blues some shit and say, you got to find a way to capitalize? Like, every goalie is going to have a hole eventually.
See, I was a forward, so it's always the forward's fault for not scoring. It's never the goalie's doing.
Right.
It's like, I should have scored that. My fault. I had holes to score, and I didn't hit them. So
yeah. Yeah, and even the Blues' only goal, right? He got a piece of it.
Yeah,
so I mean, the guy was dialed in,
and like I said, the Blues did lose, so the results sucked. But this was a fun game to watch. Frustrating in the first two periods because I thought the Blues played I thought they played kind of bad in the first two periods. I didn't like their puck control, the puck possession. Their passing was sloppy. I thought Vegas was taking the Blues for a good chunk of the game. Blues really came on in the third and played desperate hockey. And that if they had played that way, in the second period at least, it might be a different story.
Yeah. Or
if Sundqvist scores in the first shift of the game, which he damn near almost did, knows what happens. But, woulda, coulda's.
Yeah. No, I thought the Knights withstood that opening shift the Blues settled into their game, didn't play great. The intensity wasn't great the first period and a half. Falk on Dorofeev's goal. I mean, come on. You've got two guys covering the guy in the slot, and he goes to cover the same guy and gives Dorofeev the lane to the net.
Yeah,
that is just disgusting defensive play by Falk. But the Blues found they found the intensity, and that felt like watching that third period was like, this is playoff hockey.
Yes.
This feels like if this is the only taste we get, God, I want it.
It's like, here come the Blues.
I want it all season.
Yeah. They were all when the Blues started to come in the third period, like, they're coming and they're either gonna their goalie is gonna either keep standing on his head and the Blues are getting shut out, or we're scoring some goals. There's not going to be Vegas isn't really pushing back that much. This is our game to lose at this point,
right? So, and I thought Kyrou was frustrated in the first two periods, and earlier in the season, before these last three games, he probably sulks in the third period, but he pushed that goal. He's the guy that started the play.
Yep.
Great backhand pass to Shen, great backhand pass to Saad. And I was impressed by Kyrou showing up in the third period.
He did catch a lot of flack on social media for not following up his previous great game with another good, great game in the biggest game of the season. And while he did have a very nice play on the Blues goal, he regressed in this game. He took a huge step down from the game before, as did most of the team. There were very few Blues players aside from Bennington, that had a good first two periods. They were.
I thought Binnington had a for his standard. I thought he had a rough game against Minnesota.
Oh yeah,
I thought he really picked his game up against Vegas.
I agree.
No, the game against Minnesota felt like two desperate teams just slapping each other in the face back and forth, and the Vegas game was two teams that knew what was at stake, fighting to the death.
Right. What'd you guys think of the hit on Brandon Saad by Braden McNabb in the first period? I loved it. You mentioned playoff hockey. That hit, I was like, and you hear the crowd, the roar of the crowd, and then you know, Braden Shen instantly steps up and drops the gloves. What I love right there.
I have zero issues with the hit. I mean, you know, sometimes players get hurt on clean plays. That's what this was. It was a good hard hit. And I have zero issue with Shen dropping the gloves there, because I've always said, you know, people say, oh, they're dropping the gloves on a clean hit. No. To me, if you see your teammate get rocked, you're sticking up for your teammate. You're sending a message to the other team saying, hey, if you're going to throw your weight around like that, then you're going to have to answer for it this way. That's a form of pushback. I like it. Now, you could say, well, just play physical right back at him. Okay, I get it. But your player's hurt. So, you know, it was a nasty hit. It was clean. But I have no problem with Shen dropping the gloves there just to defend his teammate, saying, if you're going to hit the guy that hard, then let's fight. Let's go. I have no problem with that.
And it was a good scrap. I enjoyed that scrap. Sure. That was a good one.
Right. And in Shen's comments after the game, right, he and McNabb trained together. They're both Saskatchewan boys. They trained together in the offseason. They're friends. And that's what happens when you get into this high intensity hockey. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, it wasn't like, you know, some of the, you know, early season, oh, our player got hit, I got to drop the gloves, you know, obligatory kind of thing. This was an emotional response by the captain of this team.
Yep.
And how many, and what would have happened if Saad got rocked and no one stepped in? Then obviously the fans would be pissed. No one's sticking up for the teammate for whom they got rocked. You have to.
Especially a guy who's playing as well as Saad is right now.
And I hate it when people say, oh, I hate it when they drop the gloves after a clean hit. Nah, I mean, not a hit like that. Now, a clean hit that doesn't, there's no harm, no foul, that's different. But yeah, a clean hit that just rocks your player, I'm like, yeah, oh, you gotta stand up for your guy. Right. You're gonna throw your weight around like that. You're gonna play, you know, on the line, on the edge, you know, let's go.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead, Bill.
I was just gonna say, a clean, you know, a hard, heavy hit in the corner on a hockey play, as opposed to cleaning a guy's clock when he's not looking, right? Watching the puck, whatever, in the neutral zone, totally different in this situation.
Yep. Well, we are looking at standings. We're standings watching officially now. I mean, we have been now for a couple weeks, but we have 10 games left for the Blues, Predators, and Golden Knights, as well as the Jets in that third spot. But I do not think the Blues are 14 points back at that third spot in Central. I don't think that is something that is even going to – yeah, that's not going to happen. So we are looking at wild card specifically. The Nashville Predators have the first wild card spot. Again, this is being recorded March 27th, right now at 11:15. Nashville Predators, 72 games played, 10 left, 90 points. Vegas Golden Knights hold the second wild card spot, same amount of games, 86 points. Blues, same amount of games, are just on the outside looking in at 80 points. So they hold, they are 6 points back of the Vegas Golden Knights, 10 points back of the Nashville Predators. I again think the goal now is to get that second wild card. I don't see them thrusting themselves up into that first wild card.
There's no way.
Yeah, I don't see it happening unless Nashville would have to completely implode.
And
Vegas,
the Blues would have to. Yeah, they have to. Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Yeah. So they still. I do think there is still a good chance. With we talked about strength of schedule a little bit. The Blues could pull together a run here, and Vegas could have some issues. So I don't think it's completely out of the question. The Blues make the playoffs. I think we'll have a much better idea of what could happen by this time next week. So right now, though, I think it's up in the air. I like the Blues' chances, again, with strength of schedule. But, yeah, we'll see how it goes.
I mean, you got to play well. I can see. Okay, so if the let's say the Blues lose their next two, okay, and Vegas goes 1-1 and they're down by 8 points with 8 games to go, I can see the team being down and realizing, hey, it's just not going to happen. And I could see a couple more losses coming, and you know, that they might not have had if they had a, you know, won the previous two. So I think the early on in this first 10-game stretch, this last game, 10-game stretch, early on in it is important. Because if they win two or three here in a row, that's going to give them more confidence, more momentum. If they lose one or two of these next two, that's like, oh God, we blew it. And I can see them kind of shitting the bed in a couple other games down the stretch. So I think it really depends on how they start this last 10 game stretch as far as how they finish it.
Right. And that tomorrow night is going to be huge against Calgary. Right? Calgary is the team that is most closely behind us. The Blues have a chance to basically, you know, what's the Armstrong quote? Stick the knife in the eye and
just kill them.
Right.
Yeah.
It's their opportunity to take somebody out, right? And use that as a jumping board going into the weekend game against San Jose.
They have lost 4 straight. Right. Calgary has.
Yeah. Calgary's not looking great at this point after trading Hanifin and earlier on Lindholm. But realistically, still the Minnesota Wild, according to Money Puck, have a better chance at making the playoffs than the Blues.
That's
7.6 to 4.5.
And that is insane to me because their strength of schedule is harder than the Blues too.
Yeah.
I don't understand that at all.
It's gotta be Money Puck's model. Doesn't consider strength of schedule.
It has to.
It doesn't. Why wouldn't it? It doesn't weight it.
They play,
want them to.
They play Colorado twice, Winnipeg once, LA once, and Vegas twice.
What are their records against those teams? Maybe they play really well against them.
Maybe, but yeah, it's true. But their strength of schedule is 515, and the Blues is 487. So
in terms of schedule left, the Blues do play, as Bill mentioned, tomorrow night, Thursday night. Calgary Flames, 7 o'clock here at Scott Trade Center, Enterprise Center. Yeah, went back in time there. Jerome McGinley, watch out for him. He's going to burn up Barrett Jackman, number one defenseman.
And former Blue Kick, Craig Conroy.
Is it 2007?
Solid year.
I think it's general manager.
And then Saturday, the Blues have a big showing against the San Jose Sharks at 7 o'clock here at Enterprise Center. And then Monday, they play a very good team in the Edmonton Oilers, 8 o'clock, one of their bigger games they'll have this year. Remaining in the year. It's an 8 o'clock start. It's on ESPN Plus. I guess that's why it's at 8, because it's here in St. Louis. And then we'll have a show before then. But after that, they will then play Nashville, San Jose, Anaheim, Chicago, Carolina, Seattle, and Dallas to close out the year. So you mentioned strength of schedule. Looking pretty good for the Blues. You got a couple rough ones there, I think, against Edmonton, Nashville, and Carolina, and Dallas. But I think the Blues could take many of those games.
You know what, though? The game against Carolina is the second to the last game of the season for the Blues. So that game may not mean anything to Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So there's that. It may mean everything to the Blues.
Right.
It may mean nothing to them. And it's a home game for the Blues. Here's the thing, too, is that the game is against the Carolina Hurricanes and the Edmonton Oilers are both home games for the Blues.
Yep.
So tough opponents, but we're at home, where we play very well.
Yep.
Yeah. It still just doesn't feel like having an Eastern Conference game in the last three of the season.
Right. Why?
We should be done with Eastern Conference games by the end of February.
Yeah.
Like, there should never be interconference play between March and April.
I don't want interconference play at all, but that's
I'm fine with one game. So you basically have, 16 games against the other conference?
I want like 8 games against – 6 to 8 games against division opponents each season.
Give me one game against all the Eastern Conference and then one game against the Pacific, and give me all conference other than that. I'd love that.
Or just do what or the two. NFL does and just even, go to one division, even, play one division only.
Even two against the Pacific because, you know, but because there's some of them, you have three games.
Home and a home, it's like, yeah.
Why are you playing three games against the Calgary Flames? You know, like, what the hell is that?
And there are some games in the division the Blues only play three games, I believe. Against
yeah, there players. Is. Yep.
The most they play I is think, four, and they there are some games they play, some teams they play three.
I think Minnesota is one of them.
It's dumb.
Which it's like, you have got to play Minnesota, Colorado, Chicago. You got to play them four times at least.
It's dumb. I think six. You got to play every team in your division six at least.
100%.
Six I'd say to eight. Eight. I, yeah, I agree with you. And you play the Pacific, but I just whatever works out, if you've got, okay, we'll play one division from the East or whatever to fill out the schedule and just rotate it every year like the NFL does.
Yep.
I don't know.
They did that for a couple of years, early 2000s, and then abandoned it. And I don't understand why.
Yeah. I think good debate for another time.
At any rate,
I did want to bring up Kent Morris's comment. Dislike the idea of only dressing 11 forwards and going with seven. I did want to talk about that, right? that blew up. Are you guys done? Are you fighting over who's going to pull it up?
That is why we need a producer.
Yes. I agree with you, Bill. I if you're against, I didn't like it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, when Saad, you know, had to go to concussion protocol, you're like, oh shit, this is bad. Yep. But then when, you know, it's like, this is going to blow up in our face. And then he came back like, oh yeah. And then Sundqvist goes down. And like the second I saw that with Sundqvist, I'm like, oh, that's a knee. He's done.
And they didn't even play two of the defensemen very much.
Right.
So they had seven defensemen.
Right.
And they, if you're going to have seven defensemen, use them. And I thought, okay, with Sundqvist down, what's the logical play here?
Move Perunovic
to a forward. Yes.
Yes. Perunovic
on why? The wing. Why not do that? Move him to a put him on
they,
the third.
They line. Used to do that. Hitchcock used to do that with Chris Russell. They'd play seven, and if there was an injury, he'd put Russell on wing. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, do that.
Perunovic is the perfect player for that.
Right. If there's anything to what Light Sound Geometry was saying earlier about Hitchcock still kind of coaching this team, that felt like a very Hitchcock thing, right? Oh, tonight we're going to go with seven. We don't like Bolduc's game right now, so we're going to go with seven defensemen. That is the most Hitchcockian thing ever, and I fucking hate it.
It's like LaRusso batting the pitcher eighth.
Yeah, oh, like, what are you doing? God.
You're overthinking things, I think. I understand wanting options and flexibility with the defense, but if you're dressing seven defensemen and 11 forwards, and you're not even playing two of the defensemen that much, I think I had the numbers up earlier. One got like 5 minutes. Who got 7 minutes? It's like, come on, why?
It doesn't make any sense.
I don't get it. Silly. And then there's an injury.
Well, like
and
you
then
said, what'd you get? There's an injury, so you're down to 10 forwards. So you're still not going to play one of those defensemen.
You
like what the hell?
I know you have to move one as a forward. You have to.
Yeah,
I don't get it.
And I get I think their thinking was because I heard Kerber say this that Kyrou is picking his game up. You want him on the ice right now.
They
so you want to be able to double shift him as much as possible. But when you've got an injury, you gotta do something. You can't just, well, that guy's injured. We're gonna play 10 forwards. Hey, defenseman, you're not gonna play the whole second period. Like, what the fuck's the point?
It was I was waiting for them to say Perunovic is Mamuto to a forward spot, and it never happened.
Yeah.
And I was like, what?
Yeah.
Made, very silly.
Made zero sense.
Yep.
And I should pull up his stats to see how much he played in that game.
Do it.
It was against Vegas. Yeah. Okay. Well, the time on ice, St. Louis. Okay. Does it have the full? Does it? No. Yeah, I'll just pop the box score.
Well, we can move on while you look that up if you want.
It's right.
Let's talk bubbleheads.
Okay. So, defenseman. Yeah. Perunovic got 5 minutes and 19 seconds of ice time. And Scandella got 6:56.
Even Scandella, put him a couple shifts out on wings, you know, like get these guys some playing time. They're they're fucking ready. Like they're more fresh than anyone.
Scandella on the forecheck with that massive fucking stick that he uses would be dangerous on, you know, like three shifts in the third period.
Or how about late in the third period, put Krug on the wing and let Scandella play D.
Yeah.
You know,
put Breakle in front of the net.
I would have no problem with them having three defensemen out there if it meant like moving they had one of their big guys doing something important in front of the net.
I there were so many things you could have done because you went 11-7.
Right.
And they didn't do any of them.
Right. And what they did was sap the guy's energy, right? Sap the big, you know, the main player's energies. And that, yep. Yeah. Hopefully that's a lesson learned and they don't try that shit again. But if Ken Hitchcock is still calling shots, they'll do it again tomorrow and just have different utilization.
I need to find that podcast episode and if I will listen to it and we will play the clip next week. If that is truly what was said.
That's something to ask somebody like one of the beat writers, if we could. You know, to say, Lou, hey, what have you heard, Lou or JR? Just to say, hey, you know, is this? Have you heard? What's the deal with these daily meetings with Hitchcock and how he's in on decision making? Which I guess you'd have to figure he would be because he's being paid by the team, so he's doing something. But how much influence does he have over the roster, over the game plan, stuff like that?
Yeah. Yep. That's a good question. I will ask one of them.
I'd love to. That's a great question. I think
hopefully we will have an answer for everyone next week. So stay tuned. Rapid fire tidbits from around the NHL. The Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads have been found, everybody. The Pittsburgh Penguins announced Monday they have secured the missing shipment of bobblehead dolls that the team had reported as stolen on March 14th. According to Penguins President of Business Operations Kevin Acklin, the team was notified last week that a special cargo recovery team negotiated the return of the stolen property to a secure warehouse located in Ontario, California. Quote, another chapter in the storied history of the Penguins. Stay tuned for details on a movie deal with Jean-Claude Van Damme, Acklin said on social media.
This is so bananas. They're treating this like it's a joke. You know what I mean? Like it's a marketing thing.
Yeah. The team learned it was the victim of cargo theft after it failed to receive the shipment of Jagr bobblehead dolls depicting the NHL legend with his famous salute celebration as scheduled before its game against the visiting San Jose Sharks on March 14th. Yeah, this is weird. This has been a weird story.
Yeah, the whole Jagr commercial that they're making a joke out of it. I'm like,
there was an article the other day that said that was just trying to lean into it a little bit, but
I get it. They're trying to make light of a situation.
Marketing, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I heard he was in town, and so they were like, "What do you think about? Yeah. Like, we just got this news. Will you record something real quick?" And he was like, "Yeah."
They had a mock up of the bobblehead in that Acklin guy's office that they used for that.
Okay.
Filming,
which I like. I mean, it's different. I like the humor in it. I think it would have gone south really bad if it had been a guerrilla marketing, a fake news story that they tried to do something with. It would have pissed off a lot of people. If it's a bobblehead, you get pissed off. But I don't know. I like the fact that I guess they lean into it, but. It does lead the door open for conspiracy theories, does it not?
Well, and it's so weird because this is a direct quote. A special cargo recovery team negotiated the return of the stolen property to a secure warehouse.
It's so
you're
weird.
You're telling me literally had like an investigation to find this and we're sitting here making jokes about it? Like odd.
It is very 80s movie like.
Yeah, right. It was that team was led by Liam Neeson and
Jean-Claude Van Damme involved somewhere.
Right.
I want my bobbleheads back.
I have skills. Very specific
set of skills.
Just ask the bobbleheads. They'll agree.
Steven Seagal is probably in there acting very poorly at some point, too.
Oh, man.
He's the truck driver that they get stolen from.
Have you ever heard of the movie Knock Off?
I've heard Face Off.
Knock Off is, I mean, I can't make this up. I'm not making this up, folks. There was a movie in the 90s.
You sound like a stand-up comedian. Before
starring
you
Jean-Claude Van Damme and Rob Schneider, and it was called Knock Off. They were, I could be telling this wrong, but I did see it, and it was, oh my God, as bad as you think it is. They were jean salesmen. Like, they sold like jeans and manufactured jeans, and they found out that they were getting them from some awful Japanese mafia crew. And so Jean-Claude Van Damme and Rob Schneider basically go take down this.
He's got a cold.
Jean-Claude with a D. Sorry. Yes, I do have a cold.
I think I said Jean-Claude.
No, Jean-Claude. but yeah, they ended up basically taking down this like Japanese mafia. And it's the most ridiculous story in the world.
So Trees says they hired Danny Ocean to recover the bobbleheads. I think Danny Ocean stole them. But
that's possible. Did they hire Jerry? Was it Jerry? Not Jerry Garcia. What's his name?
Jerry Garcia.
The original. Oh, hell. The something original Garcia. The original
Andy,
guy
Andy,
they
Andy Garcia.
From.
Andy Garcia.
Andy Garcia. Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. He.
Carlos like Mencia.
Carlos Mencia. Oh, joke stealer.
Yes.
Anyway, I guess. But all is well in Pittsburghville.
And you, if you had a ticket to that game, you apparently had two opportunities to redeem your coupon.
Yeah,
to get your bubblehead.
Didn't they give him something else?
Called them.
Or was it just a coupon?
No, they gave him somewhere else. They gave him a ticket to redeem
it. It was a voucher, yeah.
Yeah.
See, they should have given him something extra. You know, like, you know, maybe like a half off ticket to a future game and the bobblehead or something.
Maybe they are.
Maybe they should. I mean, yeah, they're putting people out a little bit. You know, they gotta like go get the bobblehead now.
Yep, agree. Well, anything else tonight, folks?
We didn't really talk too much about the Kyrou. Well, at least we did the Kyrou stuff with the hat trick and the folks come out of the woodwork. You know, saying this is who he's been all season. Blah 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 blah.
No, that's no. We always hear that, right? Like, we heard that shit with Zach Sanford when he had a 4-goal game. I remember people coming in his defense. This is who he is. No, it's not.
I forgot about the Zach Sanford defenders. Oh my God.
Yep.
Ridiculous. So yeah, and I had just back and forth with a number of people, but the one is that the Kyrou fanboy. Invited him on the show. I invited him to come on and say, you know what? You're ridiculous. Let's talk about it on the show. And nothing. He didn't reply back. So,
yep. Keyboard warrior.
Keyboard warriors.
Yeah, I've had conversations with him. I know. Oh, we haven't heard from him tonight. Justin Scott. I know he's gotten into it with him on social media as well.
Yeah.
And he's been messaging me about it, and I'm just like, dude, I gave up on that guy. Like, he's a Kyrou stan, which, hey, you want to be a fanboy? I'm totally cool with that. But, like, if you're going to argue with people who actually understand how the game is played, you better be able to back it up. And he is not.
Well, he tries to with advanced stats, but we've gone over that a million times. We've seen this kind of thing with you know, the Allen fanboys when Allen was here. I forgot about the Sanford fanboys, which was so weird. That's just bananas. There's always somebody, right, that you know, someone's in love with, and they just defend them to the death no matter what. So I mean, and it's funny because, you know, people will get called Kyrou haters. I don't hate anybody on this team. I root for everyone to play at the highest level possible and impress the shit out of me. I want that. I don't want people to go on the ice and play like shit.
Was there ever a Blue that you rooted against?
Rooted against while the game was going on? No. I can
Eric
tell you
Brewer.
Well, there was. I disliked Brewer a lot just because of the way he played. I thought he was just a huge disappointment, and I was just my thing with him was he was extremely frustrating, and I hated being frustrated every game by him. And that was where that stemmed from. I wanted him to play well. I mean, otherwise I would just hate him. But I, you know, the frustration comes from me wanting him to play better and him not. So then I'm frustrated.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, Brewer was one I didn't like. I'll admit I've never liked Barrett Jackman. I never understood the love affair with him. But I never rooted against anybody. The player that I've disliked the most, quite honestly, you guys might be shocked to hear this, shares a first name with me. Can you think of who that is?
Finley? Jeff Finley.
Not Jeff Finley.
Finley had his haters when he was here.
Yes, he did. Jeff Wojtyka. The other guy in the Pronger trade.
Okay.
Because he came up and he had like three or four games where he played okay. And because Brewer was playing so bad, John Davidson came out and was like, well, the cornerstone of this trade was Wojtyka. That's the one that we're excited about. He was fucking terrible. One of the worst defensemen I have ever seen play in the NHL. And I hated that guy. I could not stand Jeff Wojtyka. He drove me up a goddamn wall. Brewer, every now and then, he would like make a good shot. You know, like he had a good shot and we would use it. It was like, oh, hey, Brewer, good work. Get the puck to the net. Wojtyka was, I'm just going to fucking skate it into the corner and then I'm going to lose it in a puck battle and not hustle back. Like, you're a defenseman, dude. What are you doing?
You know what pissed me off about Brewer, though, is that he was good. He was on Team Canada. He was a good player.
Right.
And then he came here and he sucked. It was like, what the is it? God damn it. You know, yeah. It was like, I don't know what it just and he had that look on his face. That's a glazed over like deer in headlights all the time. Look, never got passionate. It didn't seem like had as much emotion on the ice as a wet blanket. Jake Allen kind of person.
He was good in the room.
If you're going to suck, at least be passionate about it and just bust your ass out there. I didn't see that from him either. So I don't know. There was all kinds of things with him and me. Rich Pilon was another one I didn't care for.
Oh yeah. He stole money from the Blues.
Yeah. Jay McKee. He stole money too.
I didn't hate Jay McKee. To be honest, I don't hate him. A lot of people did. I did not.
I thought he was just overhyped by the organization.
Like him.
He was pretty good.
Yeah,
he was a good shot blocker.
Yeah,
he was.
So he was when he was in Buffalo. But
he had the Blues record until this season of blocked shots in a season.
Colton Parayko.
Now it's Colton Parayko.
Yeah. And what's his name? The guy who was in trouble recently, which we just found out with Mario Lemieux in the hotel room with the woman. We got him in that trade with Butcher. Dan Quinn.
Yeah.
Dan Quinn. I hated Dan Quinn because he was a player before he came here. He was decent, pretty good. And then he just didn't do anything here. I didn't like him at all here. And the fact that we traded half the fucking team to get him and Butcher.
Right. And Quinn was great for the Flames in 86 when, you know, we lost the game after the Monday Night Miracle. He was dynamic in that series for them. And I think we still, you know, lusted after him 6 years, 7 years later when we made that stupid fucking trade.
He never played here, but Anthony Peluso was a guy the Blues drafted fucking hated. I met him in person. And he was the biggest dick I've ever met. And I was like, fuck this guy. You're not even in the NHL. Go to hell.
Ken Morris says Mike Danton. And I'll let you know on a secret. I liked Mike Danton.
I did too.
As a player up until the moment, right? Up until the day after they were eliminated from the playoffs. And the news broke where he was trying to hire somebody to kill. So that was that his agent. That was, then it was just, and then I didn't even hate him. It was just like a disbelief that had happened. And that was a day, man. That overshadowed for me the Blues being eliminated that year. That whole next day was like, so like the letsgoblues.com forum was just lit up with everybody talking about it and providing sources from wherever they were in the country, what people were saying, what newspapers were saying. I found the police report online, a PDF. I was reading through it. It was interesting and shocking. And it's like, good Lord. So, and before that, I liked him. He was a shit disturber, and I liked the fact other teams hated him. He could score a little bit.
What year did that break?
Oh, I'm going to, well, 06, maybe?
It was a lockout, 04.
Was it 04?
Yeah, because he was arrested when they got back to St. Louis from losing to San Jose.
Yeah, I know that's when it happened. That was 04.
Yeah.
I was the
hey, look who's here.
Oh, Nandor.
It's Nandor De Laurentiis.
De Laurentiis.
Yeah, he's a little kitty.
It was 04. Yeah, you're right. I could have sworn I was at SIUE then, and I was.
Because I'm trying to so I found out about it. We were driving to Columbia to catch David Cross do stand-up. And
nice.
That was before...
Oh, wait, hold on.
That was before the... Like... I don't know. Maybe I could get just basic news on the phone. Yeah, it's before smartphones. But yeah.
April 16th, 2004, 2 days after the Blues were eliminated. So it was 2 days after.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dant was arrested and charged with conspiracy to commit murder.
I remember getting the news while we were driving to Columbia, and it must have been on my not Razor. I never had a Razor. I had the Sprint knockoff.
Nice.
Did you
Does
guys
Bill Lurie see... count? I hated Bill Lurie. I rooted against
oh,
him.
Oh yeah.
Well, Bill Lurie is a two-sided coin for me. He did try to win and try to bring a cup here, but then when he realized he couldn't get an NBA team, also then
bitch
he quit. Abandoned ship. He abandoned ship, and
man,
that
bitch.
Pissed me off.
Cost us Pronger.
Yep. He
cost us Pronger, and
yep.
Cost us a lot of fucking rough years there as Blues fans.
Yeah. Yeah, that was bad. Yep. So I loved his attitude from the start and the money he's sunk into the team, and he tried to win, which I loved. But then, yeah, he just total about face. Oh,
I remember when the Blues beat the Stars. They swept the Stars in four games. And him and his wife, I'm trying to blink on her name, they were down on the glass, like banging on the glass. They were so excited. And I was like, these owners are fucking awesome.
Yeah. Well, they were sports fans. I mean, was he a Mizzou graduate, a huge Mizzou fan, I think he was, and he wanted to bring the NBA here. And I mean, if he gets an NBA team here, maybe he's a great owner. But
But didn't he also try to name the basketball arena the Paige Laurie Arena? And
yeah,
first like, graduated by a year.
Yeah.
Terrible his ideas. Daughter.
Yeah, that was bad. Yep.
All right, I think it's time to close her up, boys.
I agree.
Well, I'm not ready. I'm ready now. Here we go. Support for Let's Go Blues Radio is brought to you in part by ID Life, the world's only truly personalized vitamin platform based on a health assessment of your DNA. Visit rockinthatidlife.com for more information. That's rockinthatidlife.com, and get 10% off by emailing Dustin at rockinthatidlife@gmail.com and tell him Let's Go Blues Radio sent you. And by Mike Burgoyne from Real Brokerage Realty. Email him at Mike@strikewithmike.com. Today, for all of your home buying and selling needs, that's Mike@strikewithmike.com. That will wrap up episode 25 of season 13 of the original St. Louis Blues Hockey Podcast, Let's Go Blues Radio. Thanks for listening, and thanks to those who participated in the YouTube and Facebook live chats during the live show. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we've enjoyed bringing it to you. For Kurt Price and Bill Day, as well as the absent producer Austin, I'm Jeff Ponder, and this was Let's Go Blues Radio. Until next time, everyone, fuck the Golden Knights. Let's go Blues.
It's crunch time, baby. Let's go Blues.
Is it wrong that I had wished Mike Danton had succeeded because of what kind of person David Frost is? Let's go, Mike Danton.
Maybe he can still succeed. Fuck off, David Frost.
The Chiefs are at home tonight against Cyanisport at the War Memorial at 8. Good seats are still available.
A look at sports.
I think that went very well.
Thank you for listening to Let's Go Blues Radio. Now take off, hosers.
I want you to have a heart attack and die so that we never have to do this shit again.
Well, there's 90 minutes of your life you'll never get back. Sorry.
St. Louis Blues, St. Louis Blues, have you heard the news about our St. Louis Blues? they've only just begun. They're on their way to number one. Now there's no more blues for our St. Louis Blues. The Blues are on the ice tonight again. They're rough and tough and got the stuff to win. They'll always get one more, no matter what the score. They are quite a hockey team, my friends.